All right. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. The June 25th, 2026 public meeting of the California Air Resources Board will now come to order. Board Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Dr. Balmes,
Here.
Mr. Eisenhut,
Here.
Councilman Guerra, Supervisor Hopkins,
Present.
Assemblymember Jackson, Ms. Limon,
Here.
Mayor Locke Dawson, Dr. Pacheco Werner,
Here.
Mr. Rechtschaffen,
Here.
Assemblymember Santiago, Dr. Shaheen,
Here.
Mayor Silva,
Here.
Senator Stern, Dr. Stigler Granados,
Here.
Ms. Takforian,
Here.
Chair Sanchez.
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much.
And I'm sorry, for the record, Mayor Locke Dawson's here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mayor. Great to see you.
I will say, Councilmember Guerra is on his way. We were just at this sister city thing, so he's coming.
Terrific. Thank you. All right. I will cover a few housekeeping items before we get started. We are conducting today's meeting in person as well as offering remote options for public participation, both by phone and on Zoom. Anyone who wishes to testify should fill out a request to speak card available in the foyer outside of the boardroom. Please turn it in to a board assistant prior to the commencement of the item. If you are participating remotely, you will raise your hand in Zoom or dial *9 if calling in by phone. The clerk will provide further details regarding public participation in a moment. For safety reasons, please note the emergency exit to the rear of the room through the foyer. In the event of a fire alarm, we are required to evacuate this room immediately, go down the stairs to the lobby, and out of the building. When the all clear signal is given, we will return to the auditorium and resume the hearing. A closed captioning feature is available for those of you joining us in the Zoom environment. In order to turn on subtitles, please look for a button labeled CC at the bottom of the Zoom window. I would like to take this opportunity to please remind everyone to speak slowly and clearly if you are joining us in Zoom or calling in by phone. Interpretation services will be provided today in Spanish for both in-person and Zoom attendees. If you are joining us in Zoom, there is a button labeled Interpretation on the Zoom screen. Click on that button and select Spanish to hear the meeting in Spanish. If you are joining us here in person and would like to listen to the meeting in Spanish, please speak to a board assistant and they will provide you with further instructions. I want to remind all of our commenters to speak slowly and pause intermittently to allow the interpreters the opportunity to accurately interpret your comments.
Good afternoon. Servicios de interpretación en español van a ser provistos el día de hoy para las personas que nos acompañen vía Zoom o también de manera presencial. Si ustedes nos acompañan en Zoom, hay un botón que dice interpretación en la pantalla. Por favor, hagan clic en ese botón de interpretación y seleccionen español para escuchar esta reunión en español. Si ustedes nos acompañan en persona y les gustaría escuchar esta reunión en español, por favor, hablen con alguno de los asistentes de la junta y ellos les van a poder dar instrucciones. Les quiero recordar, por favor, a todos los que vayan a hacer comentarios, que hablen de manera lenta y hagan pausas de manera intermitente para permitir que los intérpretes tengan la oportunidad de hacer su trabajo de manera correcta y lo más completamente posible. Gracias.
Thank you very much. I will now ask the board clerk to provide further details regarding public participation.
Thank you, Chair Sanchez. Good afternoon, everyone. I will provide additional information on public participation for today's meeting. We will first call in-person commenters who have turned in a request to speak card and then call commenters who are joining us remotely. If you are joining us remotely and wish to make a verbal comment, you must be using Zoom webinar or calling in by phone. If you are watching the webcast but you wish to comment remotely, please register for the Zoom webinar or call in. Information for both can be found on the public agenda for today's meeting. To make a verbal comment, we will be using the raise hand feature in Zoom. If you wish to speak on a board item, please virtually raise your hand as soon as the item has begun to let us know that you wish to speak. If you are using a computer or tablet, there is a raise hand button, and if you are calling in on the telephone, dial *9 to raise your hand. When the comment period begins, the order of commenters is determined by who raises their hand first. We will call each commenter by name and will activate each commenter's audio when it is their turn to speak. For those calling in, we will identify you by the last three digits of your phone number. We will announce the next three or so commenters in the queue so you are ready to testify when we come to you. Please note, your testimony will not appear by video. For all commenters, please state your name for the record before you speak. This is especially important for those calling in by phone. Each commenter will have a time limit of 2 minutes, although this may change at the chair's discretion. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For anyone giving verbal comments today in Spanish, please indicate so at the beginning of your testimony and our interpreter will assist you. During your comment, please follow any instructions the interpreter provides. If you have additional remarks regarding other topics, please sign up to speak during the open public comment period, which will take place at the conclusion of the meeting. To submit written comments, please visit CARB's Submit and View Written Comments section on the public agenda on our webpage for links to submit your comment. Please note, CARB will accept written submissions for each item, whether submitted in person or online via the docket, only until the end of public testimony for each item. If you experience technical difficulties, please call 805-772-2715 so an IT person can assist you. Thank you. I'll turn the microphone back to Chair Sanchez.
Thank you very much for sharing those details. Before we get into today's meeting, there are three notes of gratitude that I would like to share and address a few other items from our work that happened this week. First, I'm excited to announce that we are beginning the process of linking our carbon market with the state of Washington, with our joint market with Quebec. I want to share deep appreciation to our partners in both Washington and Quebec for all of the work that went into to today's signing. And I welcome members of the public engaging with the board on this process as it moves forward. Secondly, note of gratitude to our legal team. Earlier this week, we filed a lawsuit against the U.S. EPA to defend our longstanding authority under the Clean Air Act to regulate tailpipe emissions. To be clear, the federal government's attempt to subject waivers to the Congressional Review Act is unlawful. I have full faith we will successfully defend our right to protect the health of Californians in court, and again, want to thank our attorneys working on this issue. And thirdly, deep appreciation to the CARB staff who have been working this past week to support the South Coast Air Quality Management District and federal agencies' response to the Boyle Heights warehouse fire. Now, switching gears to today's meeting, thank you to the stakeholders who are here in person and online, as well as my fellow board members. The two items before us today are critical pieces of this board's work, and in particular, our ongoing work to protect air in Californian communities that unfairly bear the impacts of this pollution. Now more than ever, we must make a concerted effort to both invest in and engage with these communities, centering them in our plans for the future. I know that this is an issue top of mind for many of us here on the dais, and I look forward to engaging with all of you on the important next steps ahead. So let's begin. The first item on our agenda is item number 26-4-1, public meeting to consider approval of the proposed fiscal year 2025-26 and fiscal year 26-27 funding plan for the Air Quality Improvement Program, or AQIP. If you are here with us in the room and wish to comment on this item, please fill out a request to speak card as soon as possible and submit it to a board assistant. If you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 now. We will first call on in-person commenters, followed by remote commenters when we get to the public comment item portion of this item. The proposed AQIP funding plan in front of the board remains a cornerstone of CARB's broader strategy to reduce emissions, improve air quality, and deliver equitable access to the cleanest available transportation technologies. This plan complements CARB's other programs by providing critical support for market development, technology commercialization, and community-focused solutions to clean the air. While we face
While we continue to face budget constraints this year, the need for state-level action has never been greater. This year's plan builds on decades of leadership in clean transportation and is consistent with Governor Newsom's Executive Order N-27-25. The executive order calls for the next phase of strategic state action on advancing zero-emission transportation, and this funding plan delivers on that call. As you'll hear today, the plan continues to support decarbonization goals and supports hard-to-access markets, such as in the off-road sector, where adoption is in its early stages and the potential for health benefits is significant, especially for communities most impacted by transportation pollution. Dr. Cliff, would you please introduce the item?
Thank you, Chair Sanchez. It is important to emphasize that incentives remain a critical part of CARB's comprehensive strategy to develop and deploy the cleanest technologies across California's diverse transportation sectors to improve air quality and reduce the impacts of climate change. This year, that role is even more crucial. As you noted, illegal federal actions seek to undermine California's clean air authorities by reversing long-standing protections and revoking waivers for three of California's mobile source programs. As a result, California's NOx shortfall by 2037 is projected to be 165 tons per day. Therefore, state-led investments in zero-emission technologies are a powerful tool to maintain momentum for zero-emission deployments, to reduce harmful emissions and protect overburdened communities while working to close this gap. In fiscal year 2025-26, the legislature and governor appropriated approximately $35 million to CARB for the Air Quality Improvement Program, or AQIP, as you noted. For fiscal year 26-27, the governor's proposed budget includes another approximately $35 million for AQIP. Today, the proposal before the board covers the projected AQIP appropriations from both fiscal years, totaling approximately $70 million. The proposed funding plan advances the objectives of Governor Newsom's recent executive order N-2725, signed a year ago, which reaffirms our commitment to leading on clean cars, trucks, and freight solutions with equity at the center. In addition, the plan complements CARB's Drive Forward initiative, which focuses on streamlining access to clean transportation incentives, expanding consumer and fleet awareness, and ensuring that program benefits reach Californians that need them the most. The proposed AQIP funding plan includes an overview of project accomplishments and the proposed allocations for AQIP. The Clean Off-Road Equipment Project, or CORE, a consistently high-demand project that supports a wide range of zero-emission off-road commercial applications, is proposed to receive approximately $70 million from AQIP. This funding will provide near-term emission reductions that support the state's efforts to close the projected NOx shortfall. CORE was selected because it can rapidly deploy commercial-ready zero-emission equipment and deliver immediate, quantifiable air quality benefits. I will now ask that Amrit Sandhu of the Mobile Source Control Division begin the staff presentation. Amrit.
Thank you, Dr. Cliff. Good afternoon. My name is Amrit Sandhu, and I am an air pollution specialist in the Mobile Source Control Division. I will be presenting the proposed fiscal year 2025-26 and 2026-27 Air Quality Improvement Program, or AQIP, funding plan. This funding plan outlines how AQIP incentives will be allocated to support the state's clean transportation and air quality goals. We want to take a step back and discuss the policy drivers and context that help to inform the recommendations outlined in this funding plan. Transportation causes 60% of the state's smog-forming pollution and 40% of our greenhouse gas emissions. Last year, more than 17 million Californians breathed unhealthy air, which contributes to a number of cardiac and respiratory diseases. That's why we need to keep pushing forward to reach our clean air and zero emission goals. We need to work together to drive progress forward. Governor Newsom demonstrated his strong commitment to zero-emission vehicles and reducing air pollution by signing Executive Order N-27-25. This order shows California's leadership in supporting zero-emission vehicles and clean air, especially in communities hit hardest by pollution. The executive order directs CARB to continue developing strategies that cut greenhouse gases and other pollutants from vehicles. It also directs the state to buy vehicles from companies that support California's clean air goals and to look at more ways to help people adopt zero-emission vehicles. To support this, CARB is building on that work with an effort called Drive Forward. The Drive Forward initiative aims to reduce harmful air pollution and improve public health through the development of light, medium, and heavy-duty vehicle and fleet regulations. This initiative will help shape clean vehicle rules, incentives, and outreach and engagement to get more zero-emission cars, trucks, and buses on California's roads. Over the past two decades, CARB's incentive programs have played a critical role in providing climate, clean air, public health, and economic benefits, accelerating the deployment of the cleanest available technologies, increasing access and affordability, and supporting and complementing regulatory programs. CARB's incentive programs are some of the most important programs in CARB's toolbox to support the deployment of cleaner technology in an equitable way. And they have a long history of success for growing clean technology markets. With this context, we move to our overarching goals. Each program has different but related goals, which are driven by statutory requirements, state mandates, and executive orders. In addition to meeting air quality goals, supporting climate resiliency, and protecting public health, incentives also support the state's continued commitment to equitably deploy the cleanest technology available and support community-driven clean transportation approaches. Incentives help promote economic growth and provide opportunities for job training and apprenticeships, all critical in supporting the cleanest available technologies. Lastly, CARB's incentives build on the success of previous investments and improve as they evolve by incorporating lessons learned. With the goals of CARB incentives in mind, let's take a look at CARB's incentive portfolio as it stands today. This slide will show where each major CARB incentive program fits along the commercialization spectrum from pre-commercial to full market scale deployment. Pre-commercial is the stage where CARB funds demonstration and pilots to prove advanced technologies before they reach the market. Early market is a stage where technologies are commercial ready, but not yet widely deployed. And incentives help reduce upfront costs and accelerate adoption. Market scale is the stage where clean technologies are fully commercial and widely available, and incentives support large-scale deployments for emission reductions. Air Quality Improvement Program, or AQIP, which we will discuss in more detail later in this presentation, focuses on pre-commercial and early market deployment of heavy-duty vehicles and equipment to reduce air toxics and criteria pollutants. Low Carbon Transportation, or LCT, funds advanced technologies that cut greenhouse gases, especially from priority populations. When funding is appropriate to this program, recommendations are made through the annual funding process as well. California Clean Fuel Rewards is a statewide program in the early market funded with revenue utilities generated from the state's low carbon fuel standard. The program is expected to become the largest utility rebate program for electric trucks in the country, with $250 million available this year and over $1 billion in total rebate funding expected through 2030. Mitigation fund programs are typically one-time funding sources meant to offset excess emissions as a result of enforcement actions and settlement agreements. Community Air Protection Incentives Program, or CAP, provides incentives to reduce air pollution and toxic air contaminants and to support local measures that communities identify through community emissions reduction programs. Funding Agricultural Replacement Measures for Emission Reductions Program, or FARMER, supports emission reductions with cleaner tractors and other agricultural equipment. The Carl Mora program supports cost-effective emission reductions primarily from commercial technologies across a wide variety of vehicle and equipment types. Today, we'll focus on Clean Transportation Incentives, CTI, made up of AQIP and low carbon transportation. Before we dive into the staff proposal for AQIP funding, the next few slides will walk through a broader CTI portfolio to give you a clear picture of how our medium and heavy duty programs fit together across the commercialization spectrum and how they collectively advance zero emission technologies. Since fiscal year 2009-2010, CTI funding has supported medium and heavy duty projects and has received about $4 billion in funding. Zero emission truck loan pilot project provides financial support to help small fleets finance zero emission vehicles. The Clean Off-Road Equipment Voucher Incentive Program, or CORE, provides point of sale vouchers that help fleets purchase zero emission off-road equipment by reducing upfront costs and speeding adoption of the cleanest technologies available. It focuses on delivering fast, cost-effective emission reductions in sectors like cargo handling, construction, and agriculture. SHIFT, the new name for our demonstration and pilot project, advances pre-commercial technologies through the holistic projects that involve teams of project partners. SHIFT covers a variety of projects, like the first electric bus and yard truck demonstrations, zero-emission drayage truck pilots, zero-emission locomotive and marine vessels, and many more exciting new technologies. The Clean Truck and Bus Voucher Incentive Project, or HVIP, provides point-of-sale vouchers that make clean trucks and buses more affordable with a user-friendly application process. The project speeds market adoption of zero-emission technologies, provides benefits to overburdened communities, and plays an increasingly critical role in meeting California's long-term emission reduction commitments as regulatory waivers face challenges. HVIP also includes special funding set-asides to support the needs of small trucking fleets, transit agencies, and school districts. As of early this week, HVIP has about $175 million in funding currently available across all categories. Now, let's take a look at medium and heavy-duty CTI accomplishments. The results to date, about $4 billion have been invested. 58,000 vehicles and equipment have been deployed, cutting 1.9 million metric tons of greenhouse gases, about 22,000 tons of NOx, approximately 100 tons of PM2.5, and 71% of the funds have gone towards projects that benefited overburdened communities. Now, I'd like to walk you through a little bit of history and go over funding that CTI has received and the investments the board has approved. This graphic depicts the funding medium and heavy duty CTI incentive projects have received since 2010. In the early years, CARB funded many zero emission demonstration projects like the first terminal tractors, school buses, and Class 8 trucks that have since matured into commercialized technologies. HVIP launched in 2009 as an on-road voucher project that incentivized the upfront cost of cleaner technology. CORE was introduced 10 years later in 2019, primarily for zero-emission freight equipment, forklifts, and yard trucks, helping jumpstart off-road electrification. To date, HVIP has deployed more than 12,000 vehicles across over 200 commercial models and only funds zero-emission vehicles since 2024. While CORE has supported over 2,300 pieces of zero-emission off-road equipment across over 300 models, expanding into equipment categories such as construction, agriculture, and commercial harborcraft, among others. Together, these projects demonstrate the rapid scaling of clean transportation technologies across both on-road and off-road sectors. Now that we've seen the bigger picture, let's focus on AQIP. Air Quality Improvement Program, or AQIP, was established in 2007. Through Assembly Bill 118, and its funding was later extended under Assembly Bill 8. AQIP is designed to reduce emissions and advance California's clean air and climate goals by providing incentives for clean transportation technologies. AQIP is one of the programs funded by the Air Quality Improvement Fund, which is supported by smog abatement fees and generally receives a continuous annual appropriation of about $35 million. I also want to highlight the AQIP statutory priorities that were reauthorized in 2023 through AB 126. We appreciate the legislature's continued support. These priorities guide how we allocate these dollars. By supporting medium and heavy duty zero emission vehicles and equipment, especially in sectors with high pollution burdens like goods movement, off-road, warehouses, and ports. Reducing criteria pollutants in non-attainment areas where communities experience some of the worst air quality in the state. Maximizing benefits per dollar, meaning AQIP favors projects that deliver the greatest emission reductions for the costs. Priorities ensure AQIP investments are focused, strategic, and aligned with California's broader air quality, climate, and equity goals. Next, we will discuss the proposed funding allocation. This funding plan includes appropriations from two fiscal years. The first is the $35 million appropriated in last year's budget. The second is the $35 million that was included in the legislature's recently approved state budget that awaits the governor's approval. This brings our total funding amount covered in the AQIP funding plan being discussed today to about $70 million. Next, we will go over the outreach and engagement that informed our funding recommendation. To develop the proposed funding plan, staff continued to expand outreach and engagement through efforts such as workshops we held last summer and last year, and the Drive Forward workshops in November and then again in March this year to solicit feedback, where we heard consistently that stakeholders see a growing need for additional incentive funding and a strong desire to continue prioritizing zero-emission off-road equipment. Discussions are emphasized the importance of ensuring that incentive investments deliver meaningful community benefits, particularly in areas with the greatest air quality burdens. Beyond these workshops, staff expanded outreach through monthly evening community meetings, one-on-one meetings, and a funding plan community survey, which helped us gather more direct input from communities about their priorities. The survey results and feedback from all engagement channels are being incorporated into projects where possible to ensure programs remain responsive to fleet and community needs. Next, we will move to the proposed funding allocation and its key considerations. CARB staff recommends allocating $68 million to the Clean Off-Road Equipment Voucher Incentive Project, or CORE, with an additional $2 million reserved for state operations. CORE provides strong support for zero-emission deployments and continues pushing the off-road market towards cleaner technology. The demand in CORE remains extremely high. In fact, CORE received about $104 million in voucher requests with only $36 million available during the last funding cycle. And we heard from stakeholders about the need to support off-road categories. CORE is also one of the most cost-effective CTI heavy-duty projects, achieving the best benefit cost score, meaning it delivers the highest emission reduction per dollar invested. Given the need for additional emission reductions as a result of illegal federal actions, directing funds to a program that delivers strong emission reductions is important, and it also aligns with the purpose of the AQIP program as described in the AQIP statutory priorities. In addition, stakeholders have emphasized the need for increased investment in the off-road sector, noting that it continues to present growing opportunities for zero-emission technologies. These opportunities closely align with the state's broader air quality and climate policy priorities. Allocating $68 million is expected to generate meaningful progress in supporting zero-emission technology deployments. And while other heavy-duty projects have received funding from other sources, CORE has not received funding since the fiscal year 2024-25 cycle. Additionally, spreading funds across multiple projects would dilute their effectiveness. So our goal is to focus investments where they can deliver the greatest impact. And if more funding becomes available, the funding plan includes contingencies that would allow CARB to implement funding and achieve emission reductions without delay. Next, I'm going to provide a brief overview of the CORE project and what the next steps in the implementation process would look like. CORE is a first-come, first-served point-of-sale voucher incentive project. It's designed to accelerate the deployment of zero-emission off-road equipment by reducing upfront costs for purchasers. CORE supports a wide variety of equipment types across sectors like freight, construction, cargo handling, and airport ground support equipment. The project supports commercial-ready zero-emission solutions that help California meet its clean air and climate goals. Also, over 70% of CORE purchased equipment have been domiciled in overburdened communities. Staff is planning a CORE implementation workshop meeting for July 2nd to provide an overview of the funding plan if approved by the board, outline the updates to CORE's implementation manual, announce the CORE launch timeline, and provide an opportunity for public input. With board approval today, CORE will reopen and the funding will be available in the fall of this year. We're just going to take a quick break. In closing, AQIF investments support the state's core goals to protect public health, deploy zero-emission technology, and support air quality, climate, and equity goals. Staff recommends the board approve the proposed AQIF funding plan. And this concludes my presentation.
Thank you, staff, for that very helpful overview of what is in front of the board today. We will now move to hear from members of the public who have signed up and requested to speak on this item. Board Clerk, can you please begin calling on the commenters? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Sanchez. Just a note for the public, public signups will close in 30 minutes. And please note, CARB will accept written submissions for this item, whether submitted in person or online via the docket, only until the end of public testimony for this item. I apologize in advance if I mispronounce your name, and I would again like to remind all commenters to please speak slowly and clearly into the microphone for our interpreters and court reporter. For in person, first we have William Hall.
All right, how's that? My name is William Hall of Coyote Container. We're an innovative trucking company, a single member company engaged in a boutique mix of transport endeavors hailing from Berkeley and the Port of Oakland. I'm a licensed marine engineer by training and lifetime experience. I moved into trucking later on. Thanks to the board for your service and providing this open hearing. I would like to start with two voucher policy comments. I guess this would be the AQIP and recommendations. Number one, before any funding is released for new vouchers or applicants, that all NICOLA first adopters be offered zero emission voucher scale ups for the purchase of replacement zero emission vehicles to cover the actual monetary losses suffered up to the full extent of their cash investment in the original purchase of these Nikola vehicles. Secondly, I would recommend that no voucher funding is to be provided for non-commercial entities such as NGOs. Recommendation number one, an incentive with a gun to your head. In the spring of 2023, CARB promulgated regulations mandating that as of January 1, 2024, no diesel trucks would be allowed to enter drayage service in any California port. In the late fall of 2023, CARB was sued by the industry and dropped the January 1, 2024 requirement with the caveat that if a diesel truck was entered into drayage service after that date, it could later be removed. Kind of made a quandary for us. It should be noted that CARB promulgated those regulations knowing it needed an EPA waiver, and it never got one. Many of us caught in the middle with a gun to our heads made the choice to proceed to purchase the Nikola semi-trucks, the only trucks that met industry requirements. I bought the first one sold in California.
Thank you.
In December of 2023.
Thank you. That concludes your time.
We have time limited? Okay.
Yes, we have 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Paul Johan Frum.
Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Paul Johan Frum. I am the founder of Saga Robotics, and I am here in support of 2641. We in Saga Robotics, we build fully electric, autonomous robots that treat fungal diseases in agriculture, specifically in vineyards, using ultraviolet light at night. So no diesel, no chemicals, no air pollution. It replaces diesel tractor passes and chemical sprays with clean electric treatment. I just want to say that CORE has been absolutely decisive for us. With its support, we have put 35 robots into Californian vineyards, 75 more to come. Each one replaces roughly 200 gallons of diesel every year, more than 2 tons of CO2, plus the NOx and harmful particles that goes into all of the communities if these robots went there. CORE offsets an important risk, the risk of early adopters simply cannot take, especially the way the wine market is today. Demand far outstrips funding. Last cycle requested exceeded available dollars 3 to 1. But agriculture is more than ready to electrify. Every dollar you put into CORE turns quickly into zero emission equipment in Californian fields. So I want to urge you to approve the CORE allocation and keep building on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we have Mike Perry.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Perry. I'm the Senior Director of Operations with the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. We're a food distribution center serving San Francisco and Marin counties with 240 pantries in our network. Investing in zero emission equipment is an investment in the health and well-being of all Californians. In urban environments, traditional gas and diesel-powered equipment contributes to air pollution, noise pollution, and toxic greenhouse gas emissions, disproportionately impacting disadvantaged and historically marginalized communities. With the support of programs like CORE and HVIP, the SF Marin Food Bank was able to transition a large portion of our heavy-duty fleet to zero-emission refrigeration delivery trucks. As a result, we are reducing harmful pollutants that can contribute to asthma, respiratory illness, and other adverse health outcomes, while creating cleaner, quieter, and safer public spaces. Equally important, these vehicles enhance driver well-being by creating healthier and less stressful working conditions compared to their diesel counterparts. Electric trucks significantly reduce noise, vibration, and exposure to diesel exhaust, helping drivers stay more comfortable, focused, and energized throughout their shifts, as well as keeping our roads safe. By improving both environmental conditions and workplace safety, zero-emission vehicles deliver benefits not only to the community we serve, but also to the dedicated employees who make our mission possible every day.
Barbara Abbott, also with the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. Just as importantly, programs that support the adoption of zero-emission equipment provide meaningful financial benefits. Electric equipment always has lower energy and maintenance costs compared to traditional gas-powered alternatives. These savings can be reinvested directly into our mission and the communities that we serve. With the support of this program, the funds we save can be redirected towards purchasing healthy, culturally appropriate food for individuals and families experiencing food insecurity. Rather than spending limited resources on fuel, repairs, and maintenance, we can invest more dollars in nutritious meals, expanded food access, and services that reflect the diverse cultural needs of California residents in San Francisco and Marin. In this way, zero emission equipment delivers a double benefit: cleaner air and healthier communities today, while creating long-term savings that strengthen food security, public health, and equity. It is not simply an equipment upgrade. It is a strategic investment in people, communities, and a more just future for Californians. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Next is Melanie Law.
Good afternoon, Chair Sanchez and board members. My name is Melanie Law, and I'm here today on behalf of the California Electric Transportation Coalition, or CalETC. We recognize that with limited funding, CARB has to make a difficult decision about which programs will continue to receive funding, and we support CARB's analysis and decision to allocate the available funding to the CORE program. Additionally, we continue to support funding for the HVIP program because it is California's flagship medium and heavy duty incentive program and responsible for the zero emission truck market we have today. While HVIP currently has funding, we recommend continuing to keep a close eye on that funding to make sure the program remains open. Finally, CalETC recommends increasing HVIP's 20 voucher cap to allow fleets that are ready and willing to purchase ZEV trucks to access HVIP and place those orders today. We recommend considering how to ensure that HVIP vouchers are used for purchasing trucks that can be delivered quickly or at least meet HVIP's 540 calendar day deadline. Increasing the voucher cap for trucks that can be delivered soon will help truck manufacturers drive scale and bring costs down. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Next is Daryl Little.
Good afternoon, Chair and board members. My name is Daryl Little Jr. and I'm here on behalf of CalSTART to express our support of the proposed AQIP funding plan, including the allocation for the CORE program. CalSTART strongly supports continued investment in CORE because it is delivering real benefits for California's economy, air quality, and clean transportation leadership. CORE helps accelerate the deployment of zero-emission off-road equipment while supporting a growing industry of manufacturers and suppliers. Continued funding provides the market certainty needed to scale production, drive innovation, and create jobs. Additionally, by replacing internal combustion equipment with zero-emission alternatives, the program improves air quality and reduces exposure to harmful pollution in overburdened communities. The proposed investment will help keep California on track to achieve its air quality and climate goals while strengthening the state's leadership in clean transportation technologies. We respectfully urge the board to approve the proposed AQIP funding plan. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Bill McGovern.
Hi, Bill McGovern with the Coalition for Clean Air. In support of the resolution, CORE is an appropriate place to invest these funds for a number of reasons. It's cost effective, It's oversubscribed, and it addresses a real need, because a lot of these off-road sectors are generating some of the worst pollutants, both smog and soot, and often concentrated in the low-income communities of color that already bear disproportionate burdens from air pollution. Also, in the off-road sector, we usually rely on the federal government to set standards, and instead the federal government is actively trying to make our air dirtier. So there's a real need here. Unfortunately, though, this is not nearly enough funding. I think probably everybody in this room agrees on that. We saw the bar graph from staff showing that, this is just about the least funding we've had for a long time. I was involved in the legislation creating this program, as well as the two authorizations. So, it's gratifying to see we at least have some dedicated revenue coming in, but we know we need more money for off-road, we need more money for on-road, we need money for heavy duty, we need money for light duty. It's not at all clear where those incentive dollars will come from. So I think it's incumbent on all of us to get our heads together, work with the executive and legislative branches to try to create more dedicated, reliable, sustainable streams of revenue to continue incentivizing the transition to zero-emission transportation. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving to Zoom commenters, first we have Daniel Krieger, followed by Natalie Fotiades, and then who will be followed by Jessica Alvarenga-Rati. Daniel, I have activated your microphone. You may unmute and begin your comment.
Good afternoon. I'm Daniel Krieger, Vice President of Government Relations at Voltaria Electric, Inc., and founding executive director of the Association of Climate Change Officers. I'm sitting on the other coast, having just finished co-hosting an event with the Navy, so I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person. CORCOS is the price gap between modern zero emissions technology and the legacy combustion boat an operator would otherwise buy by default. Combustion boats are not just air quality issues. They vastly pollute the water and they pose substantial safety risks. That price gap matters most to those least able to carry it. Small marine law enforcement units, single vessel emergency responders, non and quasi-governmental organizations like ports, who are historically dependent upon grant funding that has narrowed sharply this past year or two, and thin margin commercial operators who can't or won't fund this transition on their own. Port operations sit next to communities carrying some of the heaviest air quality burdens in California, so every harbor craft dollar delivers outsized public benefit. Just last year, the LA Lifeguard Division's recent procurement of Voltaria workboats is a perfect example. Operating in the largest port complex in North America, the core subsidy was essential. Without it, the project never gets off the ground, and this will be one of the most visible, fully electric emergency response projects in the world, with the Olympics coming in soon too. Demand is now catching up in this space. Confidence in the technology has climbed, and more suppliers are pushing the market forward, as evidenced by the increasing size of the catalog in commercial harbor craft. Predictable, sustained funding is what lets operators plan. It's what suppliers invest in capacity. It's what allows infrastructure to develop the charging that needs to happen and the fast charging. Continued allocation to this category is where CORE has already shown measurable results, and it directly advances California's marine electrification goals and its GHG emissions. Let's do it.
Thank you. Next, we have Natalie Fotiades. I have activated your phone, Natalie. You can begin.
Good afternoon, Chair and board members. My name is Natalie Fotiades, and I'm speaking on behalf of Verde Parente, Inc., a U.S.-based manufacturer of battery energy storage systems. Our core eligible product is the RPS 150, a mobile battery system designed to provide clean, quiet, reliable power that reduces the reliance on diesel generators. We've deployed 63 units through the CORE program, demonstrating the program's real impact. California represents a substantial share of our total sales and is a larger market for us than our home state of New York. CORE has been enormously beneficial to both our company and our customers. It has helped reduce upfront cost barriers and made it possible for California businesses to adopt zero-emission equipment. As a result, we've continued investing in California. We established a facility in Richmond, supported in part by a California Energy Commission grant, and we are expanding our service operations to better support customers across the state. Programs like CORE do more than fund equipment, they create markets. California has been a clear national leader in driving the adoption of clean technologies. As a result of our participation in CORE, we are now participating in similar programs like WASIP, and we're seeing other states look to California's model. We strongly support continued funding for the CORE program and encourage the board to approve this allocation, as it is critical to sustaining this progress. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Jessica Alvarenga-Roddy.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair Sanchez and board members. I'm Jessica Alvarenga-Roddy, Government Relations Director with SSA Marine, an American Marine Terminal Operator. I'm here in strong support of continued funding for CARB's CORE voucher program. Since 2018, CORE has been a critical partner in our transition to zero-emission cargo handling equipment. With CORE support, we've catalyzed millions in investments, including 58 battery electric forklifts, 9 battery electric UTRs, 8 charging infrastructure projects, and our first battery electric top handler all across various terminals in California. These are frontline assets operating daily in demanding maritime environments. The impact is measurable. CORE supported projects are estimated to cut more than 1,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent annually and reduce localized air pollution in working port communities. In West Sacramento alone, CORE enabled 20 electric forklifts and charging infrastructure, delivering an estimated 536 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent reductions per year, all while maintaining safe, reliable, and efficient operations. CORE works because it tackles the biggest barrier to early adoption, and that's the upfront cost. When we began, many zero-emission units cost roughly twice as much as diesel. CORE bridged that gap so we could move years sooner, validate performance, build workforce expertise, and plan for site power. That experience now informs our 2025 electric UTR pilot with 8 Gen 2 Orange EV tractors and our preparations for Clean Ports program deployments expected to add over 100 more zero-emission units across multiple U.S. terminals by 2028. In short, CORE is the bridge from pilots to scale. It accelerates emission reductions where they matter most, supports California businesses and jobs, and strengthens the market for clean equipment. We urge the board to continue and expand CORE funding. Thank you for your time and leadership.
Thank you. Next is Kajellan Belcher, followed by Brianna Johnson, and then Jared Isaacs. Kajellan, I have activated your microphone. You may begin.
Hello, my name is Kellen Belcher, and I'm speaking on behalf of Earth Justice. We want to start by thanking CARB staff and the board for your continued work to cut dangerous air pollution by accelerating the deployment of non-polluting vehicles and equipment. That work is especially urgent now. As CARB staff pointed out, federal actions to limit and roll back California's clean air regulations will leave the state with an additional 175 tons per day of nitrogen oxides to eliminate in 2037. Earth Justice supports CARB's proposed AQIP funding allocation of $68 million to CORE. CORE has high demand, it's extremely cost-effective, and it has a strong track record of delivering direct benefits to the freight-impacted communities that experience the greatest harms from air pollution. Since CORE began in 2020, California has seen big growth in zero-emission off-road equipment technologies. But there's still substantial unmet demand for incentives to deploy zero-emission off-road equipment. Fleets and equipment operators are ready to move forward, but without incentives, these pollution reductions will be delayed. We also want to add that, you know, as CARB implements incentive funding, it should continue to focus limited public dollars on accelerating the transition to electric technologies. We must not use scarce public funding to subsidize polluting technologies that divert resources from proven non-polluting solutions. Therefore, we urge the board to approve the proposed AQIP funding plan and continue its focus on non-polluting battery electric technologies that deliver real pollution reductions for California's communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Brianna Johnson.
Good afternoon, Chair Sanchez and board members. My name is Brianna Jansen, and I am the Environmental Compliance Specialist for Holt of California. Holt of California is a family-owned, authorized Caterpillar dealer serving customers throughout California's Central Valley. We provide construction equipment, agriculture machinery, as well as parts, maintenance, and repair services. While many of our customers continue to have operational concerns about battery electric technology and off-road applications, Holt of California remains committed to providing these machines to customers who are interested in adopting zero-emission equipment. The core program plays a critical role by helping offset the higher upfront costs of these machines, accelerating real-world deployment, reducing NOx emissions, and creating opportunities for dealers and customers to work together to better understand and appreciate or address operational challenges. The dealer-driven voucher process also gives our customers an efficient way to evaluate and demonstrate whether battery electric equipment is a practical solution for their operations before making long-term investment decisions. We appreciate the continued collaboration with CARB staff and value the opportunity to help strengthen and improve the core program. We have enjoyed working alongside the program team over the years, and thank you for the opportunity to comment today. We respectfully support the staff recommendation and the proposed core funding allocation. Thank you.
Thank you. Jared Isaacs.
Good afternoon. My name is Jared Isaacs, and I would like to speak on behalf of Sunbelt Rentals. Today, we'd like to strongly support the staff recommendation to allocate additional funding to the core program. CORE has been a critical enabler for deploying zero-emission off-road equipment at scale for us. The program's voucher structure lowers the upfront cost barrier and allows companies like ours to increase our investments in battery energy storage and other zero-emission solutions. We've been an active participant in CORE and one of the largest deployers of mobile energy storage systems under the program. These deployments support construction, infrastructure, and event operations where energy storage helps with fuel displacement, grid support, and reduces emissions. The reality is that zero-emission off-road equipment still costs more than diesel technology today. It's strong and improving, but the market is still premature, and that cost gap is a huge hurdle on the path to adoption. CORE directly closes this gap and makes it viable to put increased levels of equipment into service now rather than waiting for years for the economics to catch up. As a rental company, that matters. Most contractors are not going to purchase new technology they haven't used, but they will rent it, test it on real jobs, and build familiarity. This is how we're trying to drive market adoption at scale, and it's difficult to do without programs like CORE supporting early deployments. So on behalf of Sunbelt, thank you for the time today, and we would hope to see the board continue to support this program. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Dan Stebral, followed by Brett Ritchie. Dan, I have activated your microphone. You may begin.
Hello all, this is Dan Stibro with Bobcat Company. CORE has been instrumental in supporting Bobcat's deployment of zero-emission off-road equipment across California. The program's point-of-sale incentive is especially impactful. It allows customers to purchase advanced electric equipment at a price that is comparable to traditional diesel machines. That removes one of the biggest barriers to adoption and enables our dealer network to confidently offer clean, high-performance solutions to their customers. From a manufacturer's perspective, continued funding for programs like CORE is absolutely critical. Early-stage technologies come with higher production costs, and incentives help drive volume and market adoption. As adoption increases, it allows manufacturers like us to scale production, improve efficiencies, and ultimately bring down costs for customers over time. Without programs like CORE, that transition would take significantly longer. CORE also plays a vital role in helping California businesses adopt clean technologies by directly reducing upfront costs. That makes the decision to electrify much more practical and immediate, while also contributing to quieter job sites and cleaner communities. As a result of participating in the program, We've seen increased adoption of electric equipment, stronger relationships with our customers, and greater engagement and confidence from our dealer channel. At the same time, we're contributing to meaningful reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. Just as importantly, CORE's leadership has a ripple effect beyond California, serving as a model for other states like Washington and New York as they develop similar programs. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Brett Ritchie. Brett Ritchie, I have activated your microphone. You may unmute and begin. Madam Chair, that concludes our commenters for this item.
Thank you very much to everyone who shared their comments with us today. Staff, any issues raised in the comments that you would like to address?
Yes, Chair, thank you. To Mr. Hall's point, we appreciate your comment and happy to follow up with you. We did have a few comments related to HVIP, including that one. Certainly, HVIP is a really important program for us, and we're following the funding there. We have some funding for heavy duty on road, including the launch of the Clean Fuel Reward. But I would say that because this is, not part of that particular proposal, we'll engage as part of the implementation of both the CORE program, should the board approve this resolution, as well as the HVIP program as that continues to evolve to make sure that we're addressing the concerns about implementation that stakeholders raise. And in addition, just wanted to note, really appreciate the commenters from a wide variety of folks. We heard from manufacturers, those who are recipients of funds, and the environmental community about the importance of that program and how it really impacts communities that need it most, that those benefits are truly concentrated there. And in particular, appreciated Bill McGovern's point that this is a sector that, as we support with incentives, it primarily would be regulated by US EPA, and we're not seeing that. We do regulate some aspects of the sector that would be covered by CORE, but for the most part, those are federal regulations that normally would be in place, and we just don't have a partner there right now.
Great. Thank you for that summary. Much appreciated. I will now close the record on this agenda item and will open up the floor for board discussion. Board members, any questions or reflections first to our transportation guru over here, Dr. Shaheen?
Thanks so much, Chair, and thanks so much to the staff. I really appreciate how rigorous you were in your community outreach and all the work you did on that, and I really appreciate that. Shout out to Mr. Hall. I'd love to receive a copy of your comments regarding your experiences with the Nikola and the drayage truck situation. So I was really anxious to hear more of your remarks. So I hope I might be able to get a copy of that. All right, so moving on to some comments about just regional equity and program uptake. So based on the prior CORE round, where have you seen the program uptake to be the strongest? And do we see higher deployment and reduction in particular areas of the state based on past experience?
Maybe I can ask Peter Christensen to answer that, if you would.
Much, Professor Shaheen. Let me address a couple of the aspects of the CORE program that we're particularly proud of. So, in terms of uptake, two things stand out to us. One is that this program has been effective at reaching cross-section of users out there in California, particularly those small businesses that are sometimes the hardest to reach. And I think that's because we put a lot of effort into educating the community, educating. Bring it closer. Okay. Sorry, it's my first time. So we engage the communities, and we actually go out into the communities, bring the equipment with us, and do what we call ride and drive several times a year, because it's hard to understand exactly what the technology options are and how they work. But there's nothing like having the opportunity to test it, to touch it, and to actually drive it and use it before you make a purchase decision. So I think that's been one of the things, as well as many other outreach activities that that we take both at ARB as well as our program administrator. So that's allowed us to reach very significant participation with small businesses. I think we're in the neighborhood of almost 40% or just a little over 40% participation from small businesses. The other thing that I would say in terms of, you know, a very positive metric of success here is that we're reducing emissions in the most impacted communities. We have over 70% of our investments are in disadvantaged communities and benefiting disadvantaged communities. So very strong participation. We're looking forward to continuing that finally, if the board approves the funding plan today. So appreciate those questions. I think it's a very important element of CORE.
And I just wanted to correct one thing. This is not, in fact, Peter's first time. It is his last board meeting. So ask away.
All right. I'll get back in there. So thank you so much for your service, Peter. I did not know this about your departure. Hopefully we can change your mind by asking really great questions. Okay. I'd love to dig in a little bit more to that cost effectiveness and where are we seeing maybe say the biggest distributions of decrease in NOx emissions. Are we seeing it in San Joaquin, South Coast, Bay Area? And then what about smaller rural areas?
So this is Nathan Dean here, manager in the Mobile Source Control Division. So for CORE specifically, we have a breakdown of sort of where the funding has gone historically. So far, about 46% has gone to the South Coast. A big part of that is because the ports, you know, Port of Long Beach, Port of LA there. So there's a lot of off-road emissions happening there. So there's a really strong amount of CORE that is being deployed, zero emission being deployed in South Coast. San Joaquin receives about, historically, about 20% of the CORE funding, and then Bay Area about 14%, and then the remaining 20 is throughout the rest of the state, kind of sprinkled throughout all the rural areas. I think when you look there, it's probably more the construction type equipment, excavators, things like that. But there's a very strong showing in the South Coast and the non-attainment regions, you know, San Joaquin.
Great. Well, we know that those regions are going to be benefiting from those NOx reductions, PM reductions. So just one last question, Chair, if I may, regarding the first come, first serve nature of the proposal. And this came up when I was chatting with the staff during our discussion. So given that it is first come, first serve, you know, what types of safeguards are you thinking to put in place to prevent some of the funds from being exhausted? And following the anticipated October launch, do you foresee conducting any kind of early implementation review?
I'll take this one as well, Nathan Dean again. I'll cover the implementation first. So yes, we're planning to have a public work group on July 2nd. The CORE team is going to be working with the public to roll out the next steps of this funding. We're looking to relaunch the program in about fall of this year. So that's just quick, the implementation. When it comes to first come, first serve, I think one of the great benefits of it being first come, first serve is the ease of access and the streamlined nature of the program for the public to access it. So, you know, a small business, anyone, any fleet who's looking to get zero emission, they go to their dealer, they say, I'd like a zero emission forklift. And they say, great, I will give it to you for a reduced cost because of CORE. So it's very easy to access, which I think is very beneficial for those small businesses. But as you mentioned, you know, there's been a lot of demand for CORE, and we have, you know, when we launch, we want to monitor to make sure it doesn't all go right immediately. So we are already thinking up some options of how to launch it and have safeguards. one option that we're thinking of. We'll, you know, work with the public July 2nd. But once like a certain amount is redeemed, maybe put a pause on the program and sort of evaluate like where it's been going, see how like, you know, small businesses and various metrics to kind of evaluate before all of the money's just gone instantly. So we have a few options. We'll work with the public to make sure that we're looking at those safeguards.
That's exciting, and I look forward to hearing anything you all have to report 3 months or so into the program. So that's it for me. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Shaheen, and appreciate staff flagging that July 2nd workshop and that opportunity to dig into additional nuts and bolts around implementation should the board approve this today. Mayor Silva.
Thank you. A few questions also. Dr. Shaheen, thank you for talking about the equity and regionally. I was curious, since you mentioned how a lot of the times this is being consumed on a first-come, first-served basis, and it's happening with people who know it already exists, do you have any metrics about how often it's frequent flyers who are using that versus maybe a first-time caller? Or are we finding that it's mostly just uptook by people who know it exists versus new people becoming aware of it existing? I'm just wondering how that outreach happens, or is it always going to our usual suspects who are getting these kind of allocations?
That's a good question. Appreciate that. I don't have specific data to share with you today, but I can tell you from experience with the program and seeing the voucher requests come through and the redemptions on a day-to-day basis, we do see new participants on a constant basis. So we're not seeing situations where we have, you know, I think you called them frequent flyers. I like that. I like that term. We don't have a whole lot of frequent flyers. I think we look forward to folks using CORE as a starting point to get experience with the new technology, bring it into their fleet for the first time, and then realize the all of the benefits of the zero emission operation, whether it's from, you know, operational benefits like reduced vibration, reduced noise, reduced exposure to diesel for their operators, or what's really important for that long-term operating cost from a business perspective, because we know that in the long run, we don't need incentives forever. This is really to help us get the momentum going in this brand new market. So not a whole lot of frequent flyers out there, but we're looking forward to bringing more folks into the zero emissions off-road.
Thank you. And then on an outreach question, kind of sitting in my Air District hat really fast, I was wondering if when developing these recommendations, was there outreach with any of the local Air Districts? And if so, what was the feedback from them?
Yeah, so I think I can cover this one again, Nathan Dean. So the Air Districts are some of our most important partners when it comes to implementing our incentive programs. And we are consistently coordinating across our whole incentive portfolio. When it comes to the AQIP funding plan in particular, during our workshops, there was attendance by the districts. And then any district that wanted to have like one-on-one meetings to talk about more specifics, we had those conversations. So we did have participation by the districts. And then we would, of course, continue the during implementation to continue working with the districts as we move.
Okay. And so kind of looking at it, I know that a lot of Air Districts will look to CORE for co-funding bigger projects. I think we've often used that for how can an Air District access these AQIP funding. So I was just curious, has there been discussion among CARB staff for the AQIP funding to be available for Air Districts to leverage for co-funding projects that maybe fall under CAR Moyer or the Farmers Program? Is that something that is being talked about or made available?
I think I can start the answer here. Feel free to jump in. But the CORE program, as you mentioned, has been allowed co-funding between the local districts' programs and CORE, and I don't see a change in that sort of policy. So we would be open to collaborating and continuing to support those bigger projects, as you mentioned, with CORE and the districts together.
Great. And then the only final one is from an implementation standpoint. I know we have the July 2nd workshop. Love that. And then funding October is the month. But I'm curious, when is October when we're expecting it to be? Applications are available, applications are due, just so that people could flag it so that we can be out doing that outreach within the community so they know when you need to have your information ready. Since it's first come, first serve, you kind of want to know when tickets go on sale.
Absolutely. So yes, we anticipate that we'll have funding that will actually be available in the fall. What that means is that we'll be accepting voucher requests, and a voucher request is basically an application for funding in the program. What we'll start the conversation with our stakeholders on July 2nd is to talk through the windows and how this is going to work, potential pauses in the program to evaluate what our success is because and what our distribution is, because everybody needs to understand that. the end user businesses, the end user fleets, the dealerships, and the OEMs all need to be fully on board with what the rollout plan is. So that is what the conversation that we'll start in the second, but that's not the end. We will be publishing information so that it's clear to everybody exactly what the timeline is and what the key milestones are as we go through the.
So this kind of serves as notice that funding will become available in October. So start getting your ideas sourced together. July 2nd is really the launch of the season, not the, it will be moving quickly in terms of government implementation timelines here.
Absolutely. Yes.
Thank you.
Mayor, can I just address one thing? You asked about frequent flyers, and one of the, or several of the participants are also rental yards. So they get vouchers, get zero emission equipment, then they're renting that out to others. So it's giving a lot of experience for those. And what we've noticed in particular for heavy duty equipment is contractors tend to use rental yards. They actually build into their bids a rental of a piece of heavy equipment. In large part, that's been because as equipment evolves and, from a maintenance perspective, you don't want to have to maintain equipment that's in your own fleet. And because we have requirements for heavy duty off-road construction to kind of keep up with CARB rules, it's easier to just rent from a yard that already has that equipment on site. So those rental yards that are able to provide zero emission equipment gets that equipment, used a lot. And in the hands of multiple different entities who then can experience the benefits of the zero emission equipment.
Thank you for that.
Thank you for those questions, Mayor Silva. Dr. Strigler-Granados, is your microphone up? No. All right. Over in this direction. Board Member Takvorian, yours is.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to express my gratitude to staff. You're working with a severely limited budget compared to previous years. And I think we're all acknowledging that. And I really know that the demands for the assistance to transition to zero emission vehicles and equipment is far greater than the resources that we have. So I know that you've had to make some difficult considerations and decisions in making these priorities. And we also know that we've heard 175 tons per day of NOx as a result of the illegal actions by the federal government, and that's resulting in thousands of deaths and illnesses. So these are unprecedentedly, is that a word, bad conditions that you're having to work with. And I really appreciate your careful consideration and the proposal before us. You've described that over 75% of the core vouchers have gone to disadvantaged environmental justice communities. And I think this is really important because there's significant sources of pollution in those communities that are adjacent to ports and warehouses and distribution centers. And many of them are AB617 communities. And the reduction and transition of these pieces of equipment are often listed in the community emission reduction plans. So my questions have actually already been asked, I think, by Dr. Shaheen and Mayor Silva in terms of the first come, first serve. And so my line of thinking is, how do we get these resources to the communities that need them the most? And obviously your outreach has worked to get a lot of it to those communities, but I appreciate, I think, Nathan, what you've described in terms of some consideration of ways to even make that better. So I think you've answered that question. So with that, I'm very happy to support the recommendation and would be happy to move it forward at whatever the appropriate time might be.
Thank you, Board Member Takvorian, and for in particular highlighting a lot of equipment and SERPs and that connection. Really appreciate you drawing that to light for the board. Board Member Limon, is your microphone up? Or is that Board Member Santiago? It is. Great. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to appreciate the staff's work to advance and fund these programs that are so critical to improving air quality and public health, especially in those overburdened communities that are near transportation corridors and other concentrations of pollution, and also supporting our state's clean transportation transition, and also serving as a model for other states, as one commenter noted. And I also appreciate the comments from members of the public affirming CORE's role in overcoming the high upfront costs and helping them to adopt these zero emission technologies, including those businesses that are making those strategic investments, as another commenter stated. I appreciate the questions about the safeguards and the responses, and have one question about another safeguard. I'm wondering about how staff has thought about any access barriers for the voucher application process, particularly for small businesses and entities, and how you've approached them. So, for example, is there one uniform application process, or is there a different pathway based on the scale and resource of the potential applicant?
Appreciate the question. And that has really been at the heart of our thinking in this program from its original design. So this the program operates through a model that has had the end user at the heart of the thinking from the very beginning. So the end user participates in the program by visiting their dealership. Their dealership usually is an entity that they're familiar with, they probably trust, they've probably been going there for years. Dealership is key because the dealership takes on the responsibility of submitting the application, making sure that the documentation is complete. Most of that is done on behalf of the end user. So it's a very simple and streamlined process for the end user. And the dealership, sorry, the microphone's a little touchy here, but the dealership is the one that interacts with our application system and makes sure that all the paperwork is completed. So from the standpoint of simplicity, it doesn't matter where in the state a fleet or a business is interested in applying. It's the same application, regardless of which dealership they visit. It's the same funding amount, and it's the same equipment that's eligible to participate in the program.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you for all of your service to CARB.
Thank you, Board Member Limon. We're going to go online. Dr. Pacheco Werner, over to you.
Yes, thank you. And Peter, I'm so sad, but thank you so much for all your work. And many may not know, Peter once helped my young, very young son at one point get on a couple of zero emission forklifts on a ride and drive in Fresno. And so it's just very warm memories of that. So thank you for all of your work on that, on this front. And absolutely appreciate all of the safeguards and thinking that you have all put behind some of the safeguards around the first come first serve. I think that that's really, really critical. I want to have just kind of a broader conversation about how staff is thinking about the equipment that is offered through some of our programs, especially because of the times that we find ourselves in. As one of the commenters mentioned, and through, and I believe, I'm sorry if I get this incorrect, but maybe it was through HVIP around the Nikola trucks, right? It's really hard. It's been really hard seeing some of these companies not make it, and having some of the people that access our programs have things that they can no longer use, right? And so if you can explain to me how you're thinking about that piece in terms of any particular safeguards. I know that so many of the parts are so proprietary, and so it's hard to choose products that can have, you know, multiple things, but you know, how are you thinking about that as you're thinking about the programs and on the implementation front, in terms of the technology? And on another question around technology, so much of the technology that is being offered now is very, very high autonomous, high technology equipment that requires, you know, quite a bit of knowledge to know how to operate. So and some even I see even AI enabled things like that. So how are you thinking about, as you structure these programs, thinking about that piece as well in terms of the offerings that are available, that to make sure that they have the uptake in these communities that we want them to have access to, but may not be familiar with this technology.
Appreciate that question. I appreciate your kind words as well. And before I forget, let me start by mentioning we have another opportunity that's going to be coming up. We talked about our ride and drive events as great opportunities for folks to learn about the equipment and the vehicles. We have our next event that we're planning is going to be back in Fresno on November 18th. So encourage all of our interested stakeholders to join us in Fresno on November 18th. In terms of the equipment and making sure that the equipment that we're including in our program is sufficient to meet the needs of end user fleets, that's a key important factor for us when we evaluate approving a vehicle or a piece of equipment to be eligible in our program. We have an extensive application process, and it includes not just having equipment that is offered for sale in California, but it has to meet additional requirements, such as meeting our minimum warranty requirements. It has to have a acceptable service and support network in California to maintain those vehicles in the event that an end user fleet needs maintenance and service. We have a number of other requirements that is essential before a piece of equipment is approved in our program. But it really doesn't stop with that, because we really, you know, in terms of the types of equipment that's eligible, we have equipment from well-known manufacturers. You heard from some of them today that we're all familiar with those names. But we also have early market manufacturers that are bringing new product, bringing innovation, and their entrepreneurial spirit to the marketplace. We think it's important to have space for them as well. But across the board, whether it's a new business or a new manufacturer that's bringing equipment to California or a well-known manufacturer, we have an expectation that their equipment is going to meet the needs of end user fleets. So we keep an eye on the market. We hear from fleets and end user participants like Bill Hall. We heard from him today. And when we identify that there's equipment that's not meeting needs, we will work with the manufacturer first to determine what's happening. And if it's appropriate, we will take action to either put a pause on eligibility or to potentially remove eligibility entirely. So it's a process. It's something that we take very seriously. It's part of becoming eligible for the program in the first place, but then there is an ongoing expectation that equipment is going to meet the needs of end user fleets.
Thank you. And I think as a follow-up to that, in terms of meeting the needs, if there is a technology kind of gap, is that something that the staff has tools or connects with the manufacturer, kind of connecting the applicant to the manufacturer to kind of learn how to use some of this technology?
In terms of the operation of particular pieces of equipment, I think two things there. One is that the manufacturer can play an important role in that. I think also the dealerships are particularly important. Dealerships are really the focal point for the equipment, both from the purchase standpoint as well as service and support. So I think it's really important to recognize the important role that dealerships play. But I want to make sure I also address what I think is another theme that we're hearing, which is, you know, what happens when something goes wrong? And when that does happen, we will work with end user fleets, and we've done this on not on a regular basis, but on an as needed basis. So that if they're experiencing challenges, we will connect them with the right resources. That could be a dealership, that could be an OEM, or in some cases, under certain circumstances, it might be a third party who has particular expertise to be able to help resolve issues with equipment. So we look at those situations on a case-by-case basis, but the overall theme is always to make sure that we are supporting the end user fleets out there so that they're having the experience that they anticipate with what is in many cases brand new technology for them.
Thank you so much. And I have firsthand seen your great work with the dealers and the important role that they play. So thank you for that. Thank you so much, Chair. That's the end of my questions.
Thank you, Dr. Pacheco Warner. Appreciate your regional perspective on this issue. Any additional board members wanting to comment on this item? I see none. All right. With that, the board has before them resolution number 26-8. Do I have a motion and a second, please?
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion from board member Takforian and a second from Dr. Boms. Board clerk, will you please call the roll?
Dr. Boms.
Yes.
Mr. Eisenhut.
Yes.
Supervisor Hopkins.
Yes.
Ms. Limon.
Yes.
Mayor Locke Dawson.
Yes.
Dr. Pacheco Werner.
Yes.
Mr. Rexhoffen.
Yes.
Assemblymember Santiago.
Yes.
Dr. Shaheen.
Aye.
Mayor Silva.
Yes.
Dr. Stigler-Granados?
Yes.
Ms. Takforian?
Yes.
Chair Sanchez?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Before we break, Peter, I'm glad you got recognition, but I also want to note Lucina and Marie, this is also your last meetings. And just on behalf of the entire board, thank you for the decades of service that the three of you have contributed to cleaning California's air. I think a round of applause is appropriate. Thank you. They say, deeply appreciate you guys. Great last meeting for you all. The board will now break, during which time we will meet in closed session as authorized by Government Code Section 111.26E. And as indicated in the public notice for today's meeting, after closed session, the board will reconvene for our agenda item that focuses on AB 617 at 4 p.m. Thank you very much. Yes. All right. Please come to order. The meeting of the California Air Resources Board is now in session. The board met in closed session and no action was taken by the board. The next item on our agenda is item number 26-4-2, public meeting to consider the Community Air Protection Assembly Bill 617 Consultation Group Charter and appointment of members to the consultation group. If you are here with us in the room and wish to comment on this item, please fill out a request to speak card as soon as possible and submit it to a board assistant. If you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 now. The Community Air Protection Program partners with communities to advance locally driven solutions that improve air quality and reduce exposure in California's communities most impacted by pollution. We know that to do this work, we must consistently engage and collaborate with a wide range of partners, including community and environmental justice representatives, air districts, tribes, academia, business and industry, and others to develop and implement effective solutions. The deep knowledge and expertise of this advisory committee are crucial for implementing the Community Air Protection Program and achieving the objectives outlined in Blueprint 2.0, CARB's statewide strategy to lower emissions in California's most impacted communities. CARB remains steadfast in its commitment to AB 617, and as many of you know, it's been one of my personal missions to champion this program both in my previous role and now as chair. Together, we are working towards cleaner air, healthier neighborhoods, and more equitable outcomes for communities across California. Before we begin today, I want to take a moment to express gratitude to those who serve on the consultation group, especially to the co-chairs of the consultation group who also serve on this board, Dr. Boms and board member Takforian. Dr. Cliff, would you please introduce the item?
Thank you, Chair Sanchez. CARB staff recommends board approval of the consultation group charter and the appointment of new primary and alternate members to the consultation group. In 2018, CARB established the first Community Air Protection Consultation Group to support implementation of the Community Air Protection Program. The consultation group brings together diverse perspectives and insights to help guide community air protection in California, with the goal of reducing air pollution in the most heavily impacted communities across the state. Since the consultation group's first meeting in 2018, the program has made significant progress. The board approved the first program blueprint in September of 2018. Blueprint 2.0, approved in October of 2023, would not have been possible without the contributions of the inaugural members of the consultation group. The expertise and engagement of the consultation group appointed in June of 2025 has been considerable, as reflected in the group's dedication to strengthening the staff proposed draft charter. Now before the board for consideration and approval, the consultation group unanimously voted to approve the draft charter at its March 2026 meeting. The charter lays out the group's purpose, role, goals, and operating structure, reflecting extensive discussion and consensus among members. CARB remains committed to supporting the consultation group and ensuring open and transparent deliberations. Staff also recommends appointing one primary and five alternate members to fill current vacancies and maintain strong participation. Since June of last year, two primary and two alternate members have left the consultation group. Maintaining full representation in the consultation group is important, and staff are preparing to open an application phase to recruit for two more vacant positions. I will now ask Andrea Juarez of the Office of Community Air Protection to begin the staff presentation. Andrea?
Dr. Cliff. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the board. My name is Andrea Juarez, and I'm with the Office of Community Air Protection. I'll be presenting the Community Air Protection Program Consultation Group board item. Here's an overview of what I'll be covering today. I'll begin with some background to ground the discussion, including the purpose of the Community Air Protection Program Consultation Group and how it fits within the AB 617 program. Next, I'll walk through the two recommendations we are bringing to the board today. First, the consultation group charter. This includes the group's roles, responsibilities, and how it supports transparent, community-centered decision-making. Second, I'll present our recommendation for the appointment of new members, including the selection process, and how these new members strengthen the group's representation and expertise. With that overview, I'll start with the background. To provide some context, I'll start with a brief background on the Community Air Protection Program Consultation Group. CARB first convened the consultation group in January 2018. It included 25 members and was established as an advisory group to provide input and guidance on implementing the Community Air Protection Program under AB 617. Over time, the group experienced member attrition, and in March of 2024, CARB staff dissolved the consultation group, recognizing the need to expand representation to include more community and air district members and to add local government voices. In September 2024, CARB staff then opened a five-month public solicitation process for interested stakeholders to apply for membership to a newly invigorated consultation group. Based on applications received by the January 2025 deadline, CARB staff evaluated each application and recommended 27 candidates for membership. In June 2025, the board appointed a new slate of 27 members to the group, which included the appointment of Dr. John Baums as the co-chair. Later that year, in October 2025, board member Diane Takvorian was appointed as the consultation group's 28th member and co-chair. With this reconstituted group, CARB staff has resumed regular consultation group meetings with robust discussion and has reestablished a strong, diverse advisory structure for the program. The first recommendation I'd like to bring to the board for approval is the consultation group charter. The charter serves as the foundational document that outlines the purpose and role of the consultation group in supporting the Community Air Protection Program. It ensures that both CARB staff and members have a shared understanding of the group's mission and expectations. Importantly, the charter provides transparency and accountability. It clearly defines how the group operates, how decisions are made, and how input is communicated back to the board and the public. It also clarifies the group's key functions and responsibilities, including advising CARB on program implementation, identifying statewide priorities, and elevating community perspectives. This slide shows the development timeline for the consultation group charter, beginning in late 2024 and concluding in March 2026. In November 2024, CARB staff released the first draft of the charter. This provided the initial framework for the group to begin reviewing and shaping. In June 2025, the consultation group was reinvigorated with newly appointed members, which allowed us to formally restart the charter development process. By September 2025, we held consultation group meeting number one, where the draft version of the charter was presented to members for review and discussion. Following that meeting in October 2025, we surveyed consultation group members to gather feedback on the draft. We received a total of 93 comments, a strong indication of engagement and a range of perspectives. In December 2025, during consultation group meeting number two, we reviewed and discussed all comments in detail. Several members also volunteered to participate in ad hoc sessions to support further refinement. In February 2026, these ad hoc members met for two extended 3-hour working sessions dedicated to revising and strengthening the charter. Finally, on March 25th, 2026, we held consultation group meeting number three, where members unanimously approved the draft charter. This timeline reflects a thoughtful, collaborative development process driven by member input and shared commitment. This slide outlines the makeup of the consultation group appointed by the CARB board. The consultation group charter states that this advisory body will be composed of no more than 28 members. Currently, we have 26 members, and the Office of Community Air Protection will work to solicit candidates to fill the two remaining vacancies. The group brings together a broad range of perspectives, including two CARB board co-chairs, 6 air districts, 9 community and environmental justice organizations, including community steering committees and consistently nominated communities, 4 industry business members, 2 academic representatives, 2 AB 617 required entities, scientific review panel and OEHA, 2 local government representatives, and 1 tribal organization. Overall, this structure ensures balanced representation from communities, regulators, industry, science, and government to guide the program effectively. This slide represents the applicants recommended for appointment to the consultation group. As a reminder, the selection process was designed to ensure balanced representation across key stakeholder categories, including local government, state agencies, academia and community science, air districts, business and industry, and community-based organizations. The first recommended applicant replaces an existing primary member, with the remaining 5 applicants filling in vacant or replacing existing alternate designations. This ensures continuity and broad participation. Each row presents a primary or alternate member representing the organization noted on the far right. The goal is to maintain continuity of affiliation with the board's initial appointment of consultation group members. Each recommended applicant brings experience through their stated affiliation, such as regional planning organizations, environmental health agencies, academic institutions, air districts, business associations, and community steering committees. Their categories align with the consultation group's charter requirements for diverse sector representation. If approved, these applicants will serve the remainder of the 4-year term through June 2029 and will support the group's work by providing additional expertise and strengthening connections across statewide, regional, and community networks. To conclude, staff has two recommendations for the board. First, we recommend approval of the Community Air Protection Program Consultation Group Charter. This will formally establish the group's structure, responsibilities, and decision-making process. Second, we recommend appointing the members presented earlier to the consultation group. This will allow the group to begin its work under the new charter. With that, we are asking the board to act on the two recommendations in our item, approving the charter and appointing the new members. This concludes the staff presentation. We're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, staff, for the very helpful overview of what's in front of the board. Before we turn to public comment, I do want to invite the board members who serve as co-chairs of the consultation group to share their thoughts and reflections. John, as I hand you the mic, I might just suggest it's not hyperbolic to say that this program and this consultation group would not be as effective as it's been without your years of service. So thank you very much for your time and dedication, and look forward to your remarks.
Thank you, Chair Sanchez. So if Mr. Reshefan would permit me, given I've been on the board since its inception, to give a little history lesson. No, seriously, the first version of the consultation group was, it was a difficult time. We were feeling our way forward, and the stakeholders in the program that were at the table didn't come close to agreement about most things. And it got pretty contentious to the point where we weren't really making much progress until a group of EJ stakeholders on the consultation group decided to kind of take things in their own hands and came up with a people's blueprint, because our big task was blueprint, coming up with advice to CARB for Blueprint 2.0. And part of the problem we had in being functional, because we were pretty dysfunctional, was that we didn't have a charter. So now we have a charter, and I'll say a little bit more about that in a moment. But what really has made a difference in terms of the consultation group being functional is once we got Blueprint 2.0 done, presented to the board and passed, which was a major achievement that I was very proud of, we took a pause, which was needed, to sort of reconsider how to move forward. And I just want to shout out to Deli Reyes, the head of OCAP, and her team. They've been incredible to work with. You know, those of you who have been on a lot of these meetings know I get choked up when I really care about people. And I care about OCAP, because it's done an amazing job of resetting the consultation group to be functional. And it is. I mean, we have 28 members from all sorts of different backgrounds, and we've been able to come to agreement, consensus about most things, the charter being the first one. You'll hear next month about our annual report, and so I won't go into detail about what we're planning. My second shout out after staff is to my co-chair, Diane Takvarian, who took a leadership role in facilitating the development of the charter. And, you know, to say that she did a good job is putting it mildly. And, you know, she has real environmental justice credibility, of course, but she's also a really skilled facilitator and ability to bring people of different views to, you know, some kind of common sense of what we should do. So, you know, I pushed for her to be co-chair. She was originally supposed to be my alternate, I said, no way. I need a co-chair. And it was one of the smarter things I pushed for since I've been on the board. So I just want to say that the consultation group, by consensus, agreed to the charter that we present to you for approval. The membership has been great. I think the new members and alternates that are before you also will continue the spirit of working together constructively. It's been, just to give you an aside, the consensus for the charter, you know, included a representative from WISPA, a representative from SEEB, you know, so it's not just environmental justice folks that are working together. It's across, and matter of fact, well, maybe I shouldn't go there. So, just to say that people from disparate backgrounds and who have different interests do see value in AB 617 and trying to deal with local hotspots of air pollution, including industry players, business players. So I'm really proud of the work of AB 617 implementation. It's been a rocky road, but I think we're really on a good path now, primarily due to staff work and staff very carefully vetting potential stakeholders to get people not just with different views, but who are willing to work together to move the goal of AB 617 forward.
Thank you, John, for sharing your heart and your reflections in those comments and for your service. Board Member Tekvorian, as I hand you the microphone to share some comments as well, as when we spoke last week, it was my very first act as chair that this board appointed you as co-chair, a consent item that did not require a lot of discussion, in part because you you know, have full confidence of every board member and of all of CARB staff and of stakeholders around the state for your contributions to the consultation group. So it's been phenomenal hearing how you've just really dove in over the last 6 months and given your heart to this. So thank you. Mike is yours.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate your kind words. And certainly, Dr. Baums, I appreciate your kind words. You have been an inspiration to me as an environmental justice advocate for so many years, and then joining the board, really a partner in fighting for environmental justice and public health. And I've learned so much from you in just so many ways. You've carried the mantle for this program since the beginning, when many were not sure about its origin story or about what it held for the future. But you carried that mantle, and you were the leader that really has made it into something that I think we can all be proud of. So thank you so much for that. It's been an honor for the last few months to work alongside you in this way. I think you continue to be an inspiration for all of us. I also want to thank the OCAP staff, those of you who are here, as well as all of those who are not with us today. You're a very special group of people. I just want to make that on the official record that your commitment to environmental justice, to diversity, to equity, to transparency, to maximizing opportunities for everyone to participate is really unprecedented. And that was really evidenced in this whole process of a charter, which some might say, as my colleague here said, so it's a charter, right? I mean, not exactly what you said, but you know, it's not the most exciting topic, but it really is important. And you, all of the work that you did really gave that message to everyone who worked on it. The consultation group members, as Dr. Baums has described, they are diverse, they're incredibly cooperative, they're creative, and they're inspired to make this program something that we can all be proud of, because it's community air protection is the place where CARB and the air districts and the community come together. And it's while that happens in a lot of settings, it happens, I think, with true authenticity in this space. So I think we can all really take a lesson from that and continue to try to make that something that happens in every CARB program. And as I said, the charter is not the most exciting topic, but it's foundational to the AB 617 work, and it acknowledges the importance of it, and it makes it official. It makes it clear that CARB is committed to this program in a very different way. So I think it's a really, really important step. And I want to tell you the 2-3 hour meetings plus lots of work on CARB staff and the consultation group. There were these spreadsheets that went on for like miles to document every comment that was made. And there are really important sections in it that really talk about the history of environmental justice, that embody a series of creative ideas that consultation group members have and that staff, included in a very deliberate way. I want to talk about what's not in the charter, because that's what's going to come next. And what's not in the charter is all of the discussion that the charter cooperative atmosphere really motivated. And that's all of the work that I think the consultation group and many communities really want to do together. And those are recommendations that we're going to be talking about for the next year or so as we develop the Blueprint 3.0. And you'll hear more about that next time with the annual report, the progress report. But I think it's really looking to the future so that we can all keep this program going in all of the ways that all of us are doing that. So I'm really pleased that we're here, and I look forward to the comments that we may have from the public. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Board Member Takforian. With that, let us move to comments from members of the public who are joining us. Board Clerk, if you would please call on the commenters. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We do not have any in-person commenters who've turned in a request to speak card. We do have one commenter via Zoom right now, Chalam Tubati. Chalam, I've activated your microphone. You can go ahead and begin.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Sanchez. I am glad that the charter for AB 617, Chalam Tubati, AB 617, Bayview Hunters Point, South East San Francisco. I'm glad that the charter has taken shape, and I've heard good things about how this has been developed, and I'm thankful especially that member Takavorian has led the effort. However, it does feel very bittersweet given on the eve of the board's last meeting, the board's actions last month, I should say the board's stunning betrayal of AB 617 communities, that we are here in June discussing AB 617. But here goes. I will make one comment about the charter, is that I've read through it. The goals are great, but I think one thing I must point out is that all of those goals should apply to air districts, not just CARB. Everybody in this room knows that the AIR districts control AB 617 process through and through. They have the leverage. And these recommendations are all for CARB. But in my experience, you know, CARB has very little say in how to shape AIR districts' thinking or approaches. So I would hope that these are passed on to AIR districts directly in a more structured way. And not just for CARB, especially the aspect of education. Engagement is difficult without education. And while the Blueprint page 13 calls for popular education approaches and a lot of other training for the staff, it only stops at CARB staff. It has to be extended to the AIR district staff. Thank you for the time, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That concludes our commenters for this item.
Thank you. Staff, would you like to speak to the one comment we heard and kind of this idea of AIR district goals and our cooperation with them?
Yes, thanks, Chair. So we have been working really closely over the years to implement this program, working really closely with AIR districts to implement this program. And, you know, as part of the resolution last month, it was made clear that we should also be, you know, as staff, conveying the prioritization that is necessary for funding for these programs. So we have certainly conveyed that, and we understand that, you know, that money for the community air protection program and working really closely with our air district partners is critical to make this work successful. So that is part of our ongoing work that that we're doing. And I think when we get to the update that we're doing, our annual update on the program next month, we'll be able to see that cooperation and coordination.
Great. Very much looking forward to that discussion at our July meeting. I will now close the record on this agenda item and transition us into board discussion. Do any board members wish to comment? Yes, Mayor Silva.
Just one, and thank you for all the outreach going on. I do see here about how OEHA is part of the consultation group. I was just curious if there's any engagement or what that looks like with DPR as well, or how they are brought into this conversation with the, if they're involved at all.
Sure, I'm happy to, sorry, just took me a minute. I'm happy to answer that. We do work very closely with DPR in this program. And I think one of the beautiful things about, I think, our Office of Community Air Protection, as both, I think, Board Member Balms and Board Member Tekvorian have said, is that it's really a collaborative effort. And so they have been our partners in a lot of the work that we've done, especially in the Valley around pesticides, for example. They've also, I think, we've worked very closely with them as we've done work with our we have selected communities, and then we also have consistently nominated communities. And in that space, we've also done a lot of work in, you know, partnership with DPR with those consistently nominated communities, particularly. And Mike cut out. I'm going to move it closer. Particularly, again, as it relates to those pesticide issues and how they impact communities. So I think that's one thing that I would just offer up. And then I think in terms of the consultation group, we are thoughtfully kind of thinking about what that role could look like. And maybe it's not, you know, I think the statute, and probably Melinda or Monica can correct me, the statute I know specifically calls out OEHA, but I do believe we've been having conversations and thinking through the role with DPR as well.
Thank you for that question, Mayor Silva. I see Dr. Bombs grabbing at his microphone on the issue of DPR, and I think he wants to speak to Shafter and the success of our work with DPR in the community.
Yeah, it's something that we take pride in terms of the AB 617 implementation effort. So the Community Steering Committee for Shafter, which was the first ag community that was designated under AB 617, they very much wanted to have pesticide application warnings, spray days, and the local county ag commissioner, Kern County Ag Commissioner, didn't want to play ball. So we actually, it was CARB staff in conjunction with the folks from Shafter, got DPR to get involved. And we actually have a statewide pesticide application warning rule that I don't know if it's actually in place yet. Yes, Chanel's giving me the thumbs up. So that was a real win for the whole state, or definitely for ag communities around the state that came right out of AB 617 and out of the community involvement in AB 617. So yeah, that's, we'd like to raise that flag high.
Thank you, Dr. Bombs. Other board members who wish to comment? Board Member Limon, yes.
Thank you, Chair. So as has been recognized, the AB 617 implementation and the community consultation process, you know, has not been without its challenges. And the community consultation process in particular has evolved over the years, you know, and has built off of lessons learned and addressed challenges. And I'm grateful for those community members who pressed forward and committed their time and work to advance AB 617 goals. This is very difficult work. It requires really intense resources and time and that commitment. And as was mentioned by the commenter There will continue to be challenges, including funding. But in light of all of that, I also want to express my gratitude to Deldi Reyes and her team for their continued commitment to fulfill the promises of AB 617 and ensure that impacted communities have a voice in shaping air quality solutions. And it's that commitment that has helped overcome the challenges over the years. And I also want to thank Dr. Balms and Board Member Tekvorian for their leadership and their commitment to move this work forward, including this charter. I think this charter institutionalizes this continuity and creates a stable framework. You know, it acknowledges the importance of incorporating community perspectives alongside technical and regulatory expertise with other stakeholders, and just really formalizes opportunities for community participation. I hope it will provide that stability moving forward. So I want to congratulate everyone involved for achieving getting us to this point with the charter, and I'm in full support.
Thank you, Board Member Limon, for those comments and that recognition as well. Dr. Shaheen.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to take a moment to celebrate all this work that's been done by the OCAP team and to our fabulous co-chairs here on the dais with me, Dr. Balms and Board Member Tekvorian. I know you've been working really hard on this, and I really appreciate the thoughtfulness. I've been reviewing it and love the focus on goals of the committee, but also on accountability and transparency and the role of the CARB staff. So thank you for your thoughtfulness in that regard. I really look forward to your work plan and hearing more about what is to come. So thank you for mentioning that, Board Member Tekvorian. And I also just wanted to emphasize the importance of funding that Board Member Limon raised. This is such a jewel for CARB, and I think all the board members are deeply committed to seeing this continue. So that funding is absolutely paramount, and the commitment to community partnership is central to 617, and the consultation group is obviously a very valuable way to ensure community voices are simply not heard as part of the process, but results in true outcomes. So I just have a brief question for you all. And of course, the board members might also have thoughts on that. But as the consultation group serves as a critical bridge between our statewide policy role here at CARB and lived experiences in California, how will the consultation group ensure that participation from communities, particularly those with limited resources and capacity, are able to participate? So love to hear from the OCAP team and others just on folks that might not have those resources or capacity, that their voices are truly heard.
Sure, and I think this is something that's a huge priority to our team, and that's something that we've been thinking about very thoughtfully. And so I mentioned it a little bit when I was responding to Board Member Silva. Part of what I think makes this program really at CARB is the fact that we are intentional in our communication and our outreach. And so I want to just make sure that everyone's really clear that the consultation group is definitely not our only place, right, where we are getting input, where we are working with communities. We have a number of different ways that we do partner with communities. We have these peer-to-peer learning sessions that we do. We are in the communities talking with the community steering committee members. Those members are also on the consultation group. These meetings are very public. So we're doing a lot basically in between the meetings to make sure that we're getting that outreach and that engagement, and really in these consultation groups. And I also should mention that we actually have ad hoc groups in addition to that, right, that are also meeting in between too. So the process for us is to make sure that as we have this space, we're having those very thoughtful conversations, but that we are also making sure that we are filling in the gaps and making sure that we're having those conversations in between that. So that's what's informing it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your hard work. I'd love to hear from you, Dr. Balms.
Well, I wanted to pick up both on your comments, excuse me, and the gentleman from Bayview Hunters Point CSC about working with air districts. excuse me. At the last board meeting, the first five or so speakers testifying about our Cap and Invest program were the leaders, not just staff, but the leaders of the big air districts. And every one of them, like five in a row, said how important AB 617 was to them and to the communities that they that are in their districts. So I took that as a real positive note about the commitment of air districts to AB 617. I really didn't expect that. And I was, you know, pleased and proud of them for stepping up to say the funding was critical, which clearly is the case.
Thank you, Dr. Bombs. Board Member Tekforian.
Yeah, just to add to that, I think it's a really good point. And we think about big money in terms of incentives in the millions of dollars, and that's certainly critical. And we just learned that this morning or this afternoon on our first item. But every effective environmental justice organizer and other community organizer knows that you have to provide a decent place to meet. You have to meet at a time, which I appreciate that we're meeting now, when people can access the meeting. You have to provide interpretation. You have to provide food, childcare. All of that's essential, and it costs money. And so those are things that I think community organizations have known for decades. Government was slow to figure that out, but CARB has figured that out. And I think it's essential and critical in the guidelines that community air protection puts forward. And districts have learned that as well. So those are concrete costs besides the incentives and the staff costs and all of that. And they may be small, but they're essential. So to the concerns about funding, that's part of what we're all concerned about, is those are not the things to economize on, you know. So I appreciate your question, and those are, and the stipends also that folks receive in order to participate, because that helps them pay for childcare and food for their family so that they can come to those meetings. So really important point, Dr. Shaheen, and I think we just need to keep it in mind as we think about how this program evolves. Thank you.
Really appreciate that, Board Member Tekforian. Supervisor Hopkins, over to you.
Thank you so much. I just had a quick question as to whether we have any update on the community air protection program funding going into the future. I understand that there are some trailer bills. I know that we provided some direction at the last board meeting in terms of kind of expressing our perspective. And so I just was wondering if there was any update from staff on that.
No, there isn't.
Okay. And then I guess one other question is sort of what would happen to this body in the absence of community air protection program funding going forward?
I think it's important to stress that there's existing funding already that hasn't been fully implemented. So the program is funded at least for the next year and probably beyond. It depends a little bit on which district you're in. But there is existing funding. And just in terms of providing a little more context here, you know, historically, this program has had to fight and justify for funding each funding cycle. So I think we're kind of still in that mode and, you know, clearly have conveyed the importance from CARB's perspective of continuing to support the Community Air Protection Program.
Great, thank you. I also just wanted to express my gratitude to Dr. Balms and Board Member Tekforian for their heartfelt work on this, and look forward to more good work in the future. And then in response to the public comment, also just say really welcome bringing the conversation to the air districts, and maybe that's something that could run through CAPCOA or, you know, have some feedback to all the APCOs throughout the state of California. So thank you for that feedback.
If it's possible, if I could just add, you know, part of the Blueprint 2.0 included that this program is really intended to empower communities to develop their own process, to work with local governments. And obviously the funding is a critical piece of that, but there's no amount of money that's going to be able to lift up every community in need in California. So one of the things that I think has been very enriching as part of this this overall program, and this is something that we observe in our annual updates, is just the coordination and development of community for this work that has been a significant part of the work that staff has done. You know, they bring forward the stories, the narratives that are really important. They're able to work closely on enforcement, get right into the issues that communities face. And funding is a, you know, very important piece of that, but it's not the only piece. And in fact, I think this coordination and convening that's happened between us, the air districts, and directly with communities in need has been an equally important part of the process.
Thank you.
Any additional board member comments from the dais? Yes, one more. Board Member Limon.
I just want to acknowledge someone that and I inadvertently omitted earlier, and that's Ms. Chanel Fletcher. I also want to thank her for her leadership and tremendous work and in working with communities and implementing AB 617.
Thank you very much. Wholeheartedly echoed to Chanel and the entire OCAP team. With that, the board has before them resolution number 26-9. Do I have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second.
We have Board Member Rechtschaffen motioned and Board Member Shaheen seconded. Board Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Dr. Balms?
Yes.
Mr. Eisenhut?
Yes.
Supervisor Hopkins?
Yes.
Ms. Limon?
Yes.
Mayor Locke Dawson? Dr. Pacheco Werner? Mr. Rechtschaffen? Thank you. Mr. Rechtschaffen?
Yes.
Assemblymember Santiago? Dr. Shaheen?
Yes.
Mayor Silva?
Yes.
Dr. Stigler-Granados?
Yes.
Ms. Takvorian?
Yes.
Chair Sanchez?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
Thank you. Thank you, board members, and congratulations to the consultation group. We are very much looking forward to your work, Blueprint 3.0, and at our next board meeting, the AB 617 annual update. So really looking forward to that discussion. We are now moving into the portion of our agenda that is for open comment. The clerk will call on those who have submitted a request to speak card. And if you are joining us remotely, wish to comment, please raise hand and dial *9 now. Board Clerk, will you please call on those who have signed up for open comment?
Thank you. Starting with in person, we have Sarah Deslauriers.
Good afternoon, Chair Sanchez, board members and staff. My name is Sarah Deslauriers with the California Association of Sanitation Agencies, or CASA, representing over 90% of the California sewer population, the public agencies that collect and treat wastewater to protect public health and the environment. My comments today relate to the first and second 15-day changes to the Advanced Clean Fleets Regulation, or ACF. CASA's members fully support and engage in reducing local air pollutant and greenhouse gas emissions while maintaining essential services. These services are supported by vehicles the public agencies own and vehicles contracted through private entities, a decades-long practice. Since ACF's adoption, our members were assured vehicles included in their compliance obligation were those they owned, excluding contracted vehicles for which they do not have authority or operate or control the day-to-day operations. With that in mind, CASA appreciated the changes approved last September and the board's directive to increase flexibility for public agencies through a limited 15-day changes process. However, the first and second 15-day changes went beyond clarifying original text. The definitions for fleet and fleet owner were expanded to include contracted services, expanding compliance obligations and stakeholders relative to the original state and local government agency fleet requirements. The expanded definitions result in a significant uncertainty since the changes do not clarify to what extent contracts for the operations of vehicles is considered. These impacts have not been evaluated, nor has the feasibility of compliance. The changes affect how public agencies procure services, structure contracts, manage franchise arrangements, and ultimately deliver essential public services. The changes subject public agencies to contracted service providers breaking their contracts upon the regulation becoming effective and no longer bidding on public agency services. This leaves public agencies at high risk of system failures with no immediate alternatives and not being able to fulfill regulatory requirements. We provided the board and staff our detailed comments and respectfully request delaying approval of the 15-day changes until the requisite Administrative Procedure Act compliant evaluations and stakeholder engagement are complete. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Before I move on, I do want to note for the public, please note CARB will accept written submissions for this item, whether submitted in person or online via the docket, only until the end of public testimony for open comment. And with that, we'll move to Noelle Maddock.
Good afternoon, Chair Sanchez and board members. My name is Noelle Maddock, and I'm here on behalf of the City of Roseville, aligning our comments with CASA and AQUA today. Roseville is a full-service city serving approximately 160,000 residents. We provide our own electric, water, wastewater, and solid waste services. We have worked to help the state achieve its climate goals, as demonstrated by the circular economy we have created. We are here because the second 15-day modifications cannot realistically be implemented by those expected to carry them out. The changes have been described as clarifications. They are not. By defining fleet and fleet owner, vehicles owned and operated by our private contractors and non-exclusive franchisees are now treated as part of our city's fleet for compliance. Consider what that actually requires of us. Roseville is now reviewing hundreds of active contracts, franchise agreements, and purchase orders across every department to determine which ones this rule applies to. That includes non-exclusive solid waste franchisees, biosolids hauling, laboratory testing, backflow inspection services, tree trimming, crane services, fuel delivery, and power plant maintenance, heavy civil construction, materials testing, and emergency response support services. Every one of those agreements would have to be reviewed and potentially renegotiated against compliance obligations the contractors themselves are no longer subject to. We have no authority over their fleets, no access to their truckers' data, and no guidance on how the same truck serving five agencies is to be counted. This is not feasible, and the costs, those fall on our ratepayers. We respectfully ask the board to provide staff direction to remove or defer these provisions. Thank you.
Thank you. Jennifer Capitolo.
Good afternoon, Chair and board members. Jennifer Capitolo here on behalf of Olivenhein Municipal Water District. This is a district in North San Diego County serving about 90,000 customers. Olivenhein continues to be concerned about the same second set of modifications to the Advanced Clean Fleet rules as it relates to customer safety and being able to look at how many vehicles within a community are exempted from the Advanced Clean Fleets rule. You've probably heard from the GM. She's been pretty active on this issue coming up here. Olivenhein is very unique, though I feel like most of California now has this pretty significant fire risk, but 70% of their community is considered in a high or very high fire risk area. And if the current rule passes, only 25% of their vehicles will be allowed to be exempted from using gas vehicles versus electric vehicles. And if you lived in that community of 90,000 people that covers a 50 square foot mile, if they only have 30 vehicles to serve that entire area. So if they only have 25% available, that's only 8 vehicles in an emergency that can be used with gas to be able to help out with firefighting. I do think it's difficult probably for all of us to understand in an emergency all the things that have to be done by a water utility, checking valves, fueling our generators, a whole host of other things. But the thing that is the most important is making sure that the water stays on so that we can fight fire with the water that's available. So very much here today to ask you to consider further exemptions for water utilities, the same as police and fire and ambulances. Water utilities should be given those same considerations as it relates to emergencies. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Nick Blair.
Good afternoon, Chair Sanchez, board members, and CARB staff. My name is Nick Blair with the Association of California Water Agencies to comment on the most recent proposed 15-day changes to the Advanced Clean Fleet Regulation. AQUA and our member agencies remain committed to California's clean air and climate goals. We want to continue to support the transition to zero-emission technologies in a way that is practical, reliable, and achievable for public fleets that provide essential services. However, we are deeply concerned with the latest 15-day changes that will require public fleets to include all lease and contract agreements, regardless of duration, within ACF compliance, as laid out in our recently submitted comment letter, and that you're going to hear about from some of our other member agencies today. This new requirement isn't workable. Public agencies frequently rely on short-term rentals and temporary contracts to meet urgent operational needs, respond to emergencies, and fill gaps during equipment outages. Including these arrangements in ACF compliance is going to be extremely difficult for public fleets to manage and also challenging for CARB to administer effectively. It challenges uncertainty, administrative burden, and compliance risk without delivering meaningful emission benefits. And for these reasons, we respectfully urge CARB to repeal the June 1 15-day changes and return to the earlier amendments on April 2nd as the appropriate starting point for a next phase of regulatory refinement. We also encourage CARB to initiate a new amendment process. Over the past year, public agencies have raised numerous issues with ACF, issues that are going to require additional time and collaboration and input, including ZEV market uncertainty, affordability, and grid challenges broadly, and then more specifically, regulatory language like the rental and lease issue, as well as fixing the various amendment pathways to be more workable. AQUA and our member agencies do really value the ongoing partnership with CARB, and we remain committed to working closely with you to ensure that ACF regulation supports California's climate goals. We look forward to continuing this conversation as soon as possible with the staff and with board. We thank you for your consideration, and we look forward to the ongoing dialogue. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Baltazar Cornejo.
Good afternoon, Chair Sanchez and board members. I'm Baltazar Cornejo at Brownstein, speaking on behalf of Otay Water District in opposition to the proposed June 1st 15-day changes to the ACF. While we support California's clean air goals, these changes fail to account for the realities of emergency response. At Otay, we provide essential potable, recycled, and sewer services to more than 242,000 residents across 125 square miles in southeastern San Diego County. Our 98 public fleet vehicles, including 28 medium and heavy vehicles, including our water and wastewater fleets, operate 24/7 to respond to wildfires, floods, power outages, and infrastructure failures. The 25% exemption limits us to 7. We are highly concerned about the latest interpretation that applies to all contract agreements, including short-term rentals. We respectfully request that the board exempt emergency support vehicles, including short-term rentals. We respectfully request that you also continue working with local agencies on practical implementation. Our residents' safety and reliable water service depend on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Charles Watson.
Good afternoon, Charles Watson on behalf of West Valley Water District, as well as the San Luis Delta Mendota Water Authority. In the interest of time, I'll just echo the comments by AQUA and all the previous speakers to express our concerns with the most recent set of 15-day amendments. The proposed changes are substantive, not merely clarifying, and materially alter how agencies must evaluate fleet status and contract relationships. The proposal would create unnecessary complexity, increase compliance risk, and divert staff resources away from core public service responsibilities. We look forward to continuing to work with staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Brenda Bass?
Good afternoon, Chair and Board members. I'm Brenda Bass of KP Public Affairs here today speaking on behalf of Indian Wells Valley Water District with regard to the Advanced Clean Fleets Regulation Amendment. We would like to align our comments with those made by AQUA, particularly that the latest 15-day proposal would bring private fleets under the ACF rule. This, as you've heard, goes beyond the current ACF regulation and is a significant change that requires more than just a 15-day comment period. In addition to those procedural concerns, the district is very concerned about the financial and compliance impacts that the expansion of ACF to include private fleets would have on their operations and their ratepayers. By way of background, Indian Wells Valley Water District is located in the high desert east of the Sierra Nevada in Kern County and serves about 12,500 water connections. This rural area has very little in the way of EV infrastructure, and it will be challenging enough for the district to meet the standard for the fleet it already directly owns, and it will be even more difficult to ensure that other private companies will be able to meet this standard. For example, the district is currently undertaking important pipeline improvement projects that require the use of contracted heavy equipment like excavators, dump trucks, and backhoes. Given the lack of availability of EV equivalents to this type of infrastructure, it will be very difficult for the district to find a contractor that could provide EVs for such projects and could threaten the district from being able to maintain its water service infrastructure. Accordingly, we request that the board return to its previous 15-day changes dated April 2nd as the foundation from which further discussions on ACF amendments may take place. I see I'm out of time, so well, thank you for your consideration and your time today.
Thank you. Evan Edgar?
Evan Edgar, live from Sacramento. On behalf of SB 1383 Organic Waste Haulers, Anaerobic Digestion Industry, and Biomethane Facilities, I support all the comments by CASA today and by the water districts. We've been decarbonizing the solid waste industry since 2000. We've been getting off landfills, we've been getting off diesel, we're getting off NOx with our zero waste programs. We've been decarbonizing with a fleet of 16,000, which is carbon negative today at minus 100. If we were to recarbonize with ACF, we'd be at plus 20. So you're asking us to recarbonize an early adopter. As part of the ACF program 3 years ago, when you adopted it, it was supposed to be a workshop about the future of biomethane. And been $1 billion invested since then, and there's been no workshop. The expectation of CARB staff is for us to make biomethane for other people, hard to decarbonize industries, cement people, food processors. We don't make biomethane for other people. We make biomethane for us, our fleet, in a circular economy without transmission losses. So basically, you're penalizing us for being an early adopter to decarbonize in order to recarbonize this fleet that will be rather expensive. We are the circular economy. We take things out of the landfill that never went there and we put it right back into the tank. The board voted last fall to exempt private fleets from ACF. You guys voted on it. Staff turned around and put us back in without your vote. A lot of people up there are ratepayers. You guys are ratepayers, and the garbage rates have already doubled for 1383. To decarbonize, it costs us money. City of LA went from $35 to $70 a household per month. Do you go ZEVs or it's going to double again? So as elected officials up there, the rates are going to double again after just doubling for 1383. And that's wrong. Without a vote, without any cost consideration, without a biomethane workshop, with a pending lawsuit, this 15-day rule needs to come back to you up there at the DS, not down here in the pit, because you need to vote no on a 15-day rule.
Thank you. Ryan Kenny.
Hi, Chair Sanchez, board members, staff. I'm Ryan Kenny with Clean Energy. We still have time. We respectfully urge CARB not to adopt the second 15-day notice language that would extend the ACF state and local government fleets requirements to privately contracted vehicles serving public agencies. The proposal effectively transforms a fleet regulation into an indirect procurement mandate raising serious concerns that it constitutes an unauthorized expansion of the regulation and potentially an underground regulation. The ACF regulation adopted by the board was understood to apply to fleets owned and operated by public agencies, not by private contractors. Neither the original regulation nor the board's discussions indicate an intent to regulate private fleets through public contracts. What is being proposed is not clarification, it is a significant policy expansion. We are also concerned by suggestions that a future guidance document may establish compliance expectations. Guidance is not regulation, can change over time, does not provide the regulatory certainty that public agencies and private companies need to make investment and compliance decisions. The second 15-day notice introduces substantial new obligations for both private contractors and public agencies without any implementation analysis, feasibility assessment, or evaluation of cost impacts. We understand CARB is facing an OAL deadline, but we do have some time. However, CARB has alternatives. The agency can acknowledge the significant concerns raised by many stakeholders and move forward with the previously adopted September and April amendments while removing the newly proposed provisions affecting private contracted fleets. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Jose Saldana.
Good afternoon. If you guys seen the movie Zoolander, there's a scene where a fashion designer has a meltdown and says, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills, because throughout the movie, everyone is treating this model's look as something different when they're all the same. And I didn't want to be here, but I felt like I was being gaslighted by some of the board comments. I've always liked Diane, but hearing that there's a level of authenticity and a new day between the districts and communities and CARB really struck me as gaslighting. I talked to a lot of the CSC members from Sacramento, and a lot of them tell them they're going to quit because they're fed up with the CERT process they're going through. Some of the money is going to nonprofits that Air District board members sit on. Not board members, Air District staff sit on the boards. And so in the community, there's still this real big sense of frustration with the process, but I never hear that here. I always hear a lot of self-congratulatory rhetoric and, yeah, a blueprint 2.0 that is going to bring a new day and end racism might make Mr. Baums look good, might make Diane look good, might make Chanel look good, but I feel like I need to raise the voice of the people who are telling me it's the same old thing and they're tired of it. And these are the people that the Air District parades here. And furthermore, I would add that a lot of these nonprofits, you see them coming out of city council member fundraisers, board of supervisor fundraisers. They belong to 30 different advisory panels and commissions, such that it's hard to see where the community ends and government begins. That's how closely aligned. I've called out community members for not having any connection to the community, but can hold up a Latino card to look like you guys are doing great. I didn't want to be here, but I felt like I was being gaslighted. It frustrated me, and I had to speak up. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving to Zoom now, we have Cesar Aguirre, followed by Colby Lawton, and then Pakal Cornejo Reynoso. Cesar, I have activated your microphone. You may unmute and begin your comment.
Hi, thank you so much. This is Cesar Aguirre with the Central California Environmental Justice Network. Just wanted to extend an invitation and let the board members know that I sent a message to y'all over email during the recess around two for an invitation to review our Ivan Insider and our oil and gas imaging review, which is a review of our on-the-ground fence line oil and gas monitoring that we've done. That resulted in around 55% of the infrastructure that we inspected to be found leaking. And our Ivan Insider is a review of the complaints that come into our reporting platform known as Ivan in Kern County. And so there's a few things that we highlighted there and would love to set up meetings to let y'all know about some of the findings that we had from both our Ivan platform and our fence line monitoring efforts. so that we can better address the emissions that are affecting fence line neighborhoods. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Colby Lawton.
Good afternoon, Chair Sanchez and members of the board. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on CARB's Advanced Clean Fleets regulation. My name is Colby Lawton, and I represent Rancho California Water District, a water, wastewater, and recycled water service provider to approximately 150,000 residents in Southwest Riverside County. I'd like to elevate that Rancho Water submitted written comments, and these statements are in addition to those. I'd also like to highlight that Rancho Water has engaged with CARB throughout this rulemaking process, and our engagement includes hosting a regional tour of several district facilities and fleets last summer for several CARB staff members. We have further hosted individual agency and regional agency discussions with CARB staff seeking clarification on implementation opportunities and processes. Rancho Water supports California's climate goals. We have already added all electric trucks to our fleet, with three more budgeted this year. I respectfully share the district's concerns regarding the latest 15-day changes to the Advanced Clean Fleet rule, with specific concern related to the language that applies this rule to all leased and contracted agreements, bringing in contractor-owned and contractor-operated vehicles performing work on behalf of public agencies. For water and wastewater districts such as ours, the revised language is not practical, will add costly delays and unintended consequences by limiting access to critical third-party providers. We respectfully encourage CARB to return to the April 2nd 15-day language and disregard the June 1st 15-day changes, as they are unmanageable, could make public agencies that are working to act in good faith vulnerable, and further complicates the already delicate efforts to thread the needle on emergency response, emergency repair, and critical infrastructure providers. Rancho Water remains willing to continue working with CARB on ACF requirements. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next is Pakal Cornejo Reynoso.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Chair Sanchez and board members. My name is Pakal Cornejo Reynoso, and I am with Eastern Municipal Water District. EMWD is a water, wastewater, and recycled water provider serving nearly 1 million residents in Western Riverside and Northern San Diego counties. And while EMWD does support California's air quality goals, we are deeply concerned by the latest 15-day changes to the Advanced Clean Fleets regulation, specifically expanding fleet applicability and the definition of fleet owner to include all lease and service contract agreements is highly problematic. EMWD maintains active contracts with hundreds of vendors who provide essential 24/7 on-site support, ranging from chemical delivery to waste hauling and everything in between. We have zero operational authority or control over their vehicles. Expecting a public utility to monitor, plan, and report compliance for vehicles that we do not own or operate is both technically and administratively infeasible. Furthermore, this requirement will create a severe market chilling effect, and private businesses may terminate contracts with public agencies to avoid secondary regulatory oversight, triggering unquantified project delays, skyrocketing procurement costs, and direct threats to essential public health services. Placing the burden of private sector compliance on public agencies does not accelerate the transition to zero emission vehicles. It just creates an unworkable compliance environment. EMWD respectfully requests that CARB repeal this amended text and instead move forward with the 15-day changes that were originally proposed in April of 2026. EMWD has also submitted comments, written comments for this ongoing comment period, and we would like to align our comments with those presented by AQUA and CASA. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Alan Davidson, followed by Jessica Cleaver. Alan, I've activated your mic.
Good afternoon, Chair Sanchez and board members. My name is Alan Davidson. I'm speaking on behalf of Roland Water District. We are located in Southeast LA County and provide potable and recycled water to a population of 55,000. We have concerns regarding the Advanced Clean Fleets regulation. We're concerned about the latest June 1st 15-day changes. This new requirement appears impractical for public agencies to implement and will create significant administrative burdens. We respectfully encourage CARB to repeal the June 1st 15-day changes and instead return to the framework contained in the initial 15-day modifications released on April 2nd. We believe those earlier changes provide a more reasonable starting point for future discussions and amendments. We also encourage CARB to initiate a new amendment process to address the many remaining challenges with ACF that public fleets have raised throughout the past year. Public agencies continue to face operational, financial, infrastructure, and procurement challenges that warrant further collaboration and consideration. We support efforts to improve air quality and reduce emissions, but it is important that the unique needs and operational realities of public fleets are fully considered. We look forward to continuing this dialogue and helping develop practical, achievable solutions that allow public agencies to maintain reliable service to the communities we serve. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Our last Zoom commenter is Jessica Cleaver.
Good afternoon. My name is Jessica Cleaver, and I'm a senior water resources specialist with the San Diego County Water Authority. We're a wholesale water supplier that provides safe and reliable water to more than 3 million people across the San Diego region in partnership with our retail member agencies. We've been engaged in the development of the Advanced Clean Fleets regulation for several years now. Most recently, we submitted comments regarding the latest 15-day changes released on June 1st. And we are particularly concerned that the proposed amendments include all lease and contract agreements, regardless of duration, and a public fleet's compliance with ACF. This change would have major impacts on public agencies and could make ACF compliance unattainable for even the most proactive emissions-focused fleets. Because of these significant impacts, we do not believe that a 15-day comment period is appropriate for such sweeping changes. We urge CARB to repeal the amendments that were released on June 1st and return to the April 2nd amendments as a starting point for the next amendment process. There is still a lot of work that needs to be done to ensure that ACF is attainable for agencies while still providing the desired emissions benefits, especially given the changing conditions surrounding the zero emission vehicle landscape right now and the essential nature and emergency response roles for many public fleets like water suppliers. Therefore, we encourage CARB to start a new amendment process to continue working through the many remaining challenges with ACF that have been brought up by public fleets and their advocacy associations. We look forward to continuing to work with CARB on ACF to ensure that the needs of public fleets and the communities they serve are considered. And thank you so much for the opportunity to provide these comments today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That concludes our commenters.
Thank you very much to everyone who shared comments with the board. I would ask staff to maybe respond, given the number of comments the board heard on Advanced Clean Fleets in particular, if you wouldn't mind responding to some of the concerns that were raised. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. And just understanding this is not an agendized item, I don't want to get into too much detail here, but do want to just appreciate all of the comments that we heard from stakeholders. We understand that this is a regulation that has, you know, sweeping impacts, changing fleets to an electrified transportation system is going to take work. And we're committed to working very closely with fleets to make that happen. I also think it's incumbent upon us to make clear that the latest 15-day changes were actually not a change in policy. The regulation has always included contracted fleets. We have been talking to fleets since the fall about that and being very clear that that contracted fleets were included. There were some questions about that, so we put forth these amendments that clarified with specificity exactly who's covered, which fleets would be part of that reporting and which would not. And you know, that clarification has led to a new series of discussions, which we want to engage in. That's part of our implementation work. The private fleets are not covered. However, these are contracted fleets. The state and local government is the regulated party. So none of the contracted fleets are covered directly. That is only the state and local government fleet that is covered as part of the regulation. That said, we did put out guidance indicating how we were going to focus on compliance assistance as part of the implementation here. We want to ensure that our goal is to ensure that fleets understand requirements, that they're availing themselves of any flexibilities that exist in the regulation today. If those flexibilities don't address their specific situation, then come talk to us on a case-by-case basis. We're going to evaluate that and make sure that no one is in a situation where they feel they cannot carry out their essential services because of this regulation, including, as we heard, the concerns over addressing emergencies. That's simply not going to be the case. We are going to make sure that our implementation of the rule recognizes all of those. So very much appreciate all of the comments that we just heard. And, you know, we will be following up with the state and local governments. They should come work with us. We're going to have a lot of opportunity for future discussion. Thank you.
Great. Super. Appreciate those comments and responses, and just appreciate staff's willingness to continue the dialogue with our regulated entities. And with that, the June 25th, 2026 board meeting is now adjourned. Thank you very much.